May I have your attention, please? Your attention. Please, mate. May I have some? Please. What if I put up gameplay of Subway Surfer and used a robot voice? Would that keep you stimulated?
Wikipedia says that people born between the year 1981 and 1996 are part of a group called Millennials. And I am a 96 baby. Hello, Year of the Rat. What's up? I'm cusping on that millennial Gen Z line, so I can relate to all you Gen Zers, okay? I know what cap means, I know what drip means, and I also don't remember where I was when 9/11 happened. However, Gen Z, there is a difference between us. We're both a generation that grew up on the internet, but you grew up with the internet. We grew up with the internet. The internet didn't used to always look like this. It has metamorphosized a multitude of times. Now, if you talk to an older millennial, they'll tell you the horror stories of the late 90s internet. How the internet used to be paired with your home's landline. And if you don't know what a landline is, good. If you wanted to surf the net at blazing speeds of 7 kilobytes a second, then you couldn't use your telephone at the same time. This was before texting even existed, so if you needed to talk to someone, you had to call them and look up their phone number in that 20-pound weapon known as a phone book, and then if someone else was using the internet, they'd get the pleasure of listening to... Although, if I had to make a sound that represented the entire internet, it would sound exactly like this. I didn't grow up with dial-up, but I did grow up in a time where the internet looked completely different. By the time I was exploring the interwebs, we got speeds up to 1 megabyte per second. So the highest quality video you could stream on YouTube was in 240p, or this big. And it would still buffer. A lot. Gen Z, you weren't there when YouTube had a 5-star scoring system and the subscribe button was yellow and people would put these things all over their videos. You weren't there when the videos were in a 4:3 aspect ratio because that's what TVs looked like. You weren't there when a background for a website would be a never-ending grid of a JPEG and music would play against your will and your cursor would turn into a sparkly wand and... Okay, that's actually pretty cool. Whatever happened to that? And then the person who built the website would go, it's looking pretty good, but you know what this web page really needs? A counter that'll tell you the total number of people who visited. Let me just copy this HTML code I found online. And if you're around my age and you also had unsupervised computer time, then great, you were also there to experience the pre-puberty years of the internet. Try to imagine the internet without social media. No Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or MySpace. Were people back then just not talking about themselves or sharing their opinions online? Were we as a society more connected with the people we knew in the real world? No, of course not. People have been sharing their opinions online since day one. They were just doing it on random message boards. I know it sounds trivial nowadays, but there was once a novelty in being able to type anything you wanted into the computer and then someone else you didn't know would instantaneously respond. Even Neopets, a game targeted to children, had chat rooms and let anyone send unfiltered messages to children. I'm surprised I didn't meet any weirdos. That's one thing that'll never change with the internet. There will always be weirdos online. In fact, most of a weirdo's life is spent behind a computer. I would know. I think people loved sending messages so much that sometimes your friend would send you a message that said,
"You've just been hit by the duck truck. Send this message to 8 of your friends and you'll be as sexy as a truck."
Ignore and you'll be hit by a 16-wheeler. You have 7 days.
And instead of blocking that person, some people would keep the chain going. Hey, I have a quick question. When was the last time you ever had to type a specific website into your address bar? Probably somewhere about 10 years, give or take. You just type in a Y, and then YouTube pops up. You put in a T, you get Twitter, and P gets you picturesofalligators.com. And if you had a specific question you wanted to ask the internet, you just Yahoo it, right? Yahoo? Oh, no, that's not the one you kids are using. You kids are using that new search engine, right? Ask Jeeves? I know there's like four main websites that everyone goes on, but back then, instead of having a social media account, people made their own websites. So there were a bunch of different websites for you to explore. And to help you find those websites, you had a few search engines to pick from. Everyone loves to dunk on Bing for even attempting to be a search engine, but back in the day, Google had some competition. Obviously, I can see why Google ultimately won the search engine battle. Google is a great company, and I would recommend Google to all my peers and coworkers. I love Google! As much as I love the internet, some of the best memories we had on the computer weren't even on the internet, were they? Sometimes the internet would just go down. But did that stop us? Did we go outside? No. We were still able to supply ourselves with hours of entertainment even without an internet. All you had to do was click Start, All Programs, Accessories, Games, and then... Space Cadet Pinball. I guarantee every millennial watching this right now just got hit with a big wave of nostalgia. This game might seem simple because there's only two buttons that you can press, but when you really got into it, this game had a whole lot more going on. Trust me. Space Cadet Pinball was all we had sometimes, and I cherished every second of it. But if you were anything like me growing up, you were also practicing your art skills. And luckily, every computer came pre-installed with a top-of-the-line painting software that every artist needs. Yeah, this program's got everything. There's a line tool, and a bucket tool, and a circle tool. And sometimes when I was really bored, I would make a black rectangle, scribble the freeform selection tool on it, and then blammo! Yeah, I still got it. I just made a masterpiece. And, Fun James bonus tip, for some extra self-induced epilepsy, hold down Control-I, which will invert the colors, so your masterpiece will go,
Oh my god! Oh, it hurts to look at!
Hey, looks like you're trying to create a conclusion to this YouTube video. Would you like my help?
No, Clippy. Even when you were around, I never used you. I just liked having you there to keep me company. The internet is still a relatively new invention that is ever changing the way we live. And we have yet to see the full effects of what being connected since birth does to a person. The fact that the accumulation of all human knowledge can now fit in your pocket? That's going to affect your day-to-day life! Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you to get off the internet, touch grass, and live your life to the fullest. Otherwise, I'd be a hypocrite. And unemployed. There's no denying all the positive things that the internet has to offer. But I'm also not going to deny all the negative things that come with instant gratification, too. As technology advances, so too do we advance the amount of time we spend online. The internet can connect us to a million different people and perspectives that we never would have been exposed to before. But it can also expose us to some really nasty people and perspectives. And the only thing we can do about those people is shrug and say, sorry, that's the internet. So, are we, as a society, better off with the internet? I think so. But just, I don't know, just remember to drink water and stretch. Alright, that's the lesson of this video. Go stretch. I'm serious, right now, go touch your toes.
Do you guys remember Jay from the Subway videos? I basically said he believed in zodiac signs and chakras and third eyes. See, I'm someone who doesn't really believe in that sort of stuff. Oh, hey, Black Zen.
Hey, James.
So Jay was trying to teach me about energies and vibrations, and he told me about this YouTube channel called Infinite Waters, parentheses, Diving Deep. Now on this channel, you will see videos like What I Eat in a Day as a Vegan, How to Stop Burning Bridges with People, 7 Amazing Tips That Will Turn You into a Self-Loving Whiz. But he also has videos like How to Open Your Third Eye. So I don't necessarily agree with everything he says on his videos, but I really like him and you should check him out. And the creator of these videos, named Ralph, I just love how he starts off every single video. He goes, peace, infinite waters, diving deep once again. Can I get a hello there? And it is super peaceful and I recommend it. And on a lot of his videos, he talks about doing a
7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge.
You know, for the amount of times you bring up
the 7-day vegan challenge,
you'd think it would solve all your problems, which is why I, James, have decided to partake in the 7-day vegan challenge. But I'm going to call it the 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Solves all your problems. Can't get enough sleep? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Can't find your car keys? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. People keep interrupting you? You wanna die? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. All these lame-o pleb YouTubers doing these lame-o pleb challenges, why does this exist? While they're doing this, I'm actually going out of my way to suffer for a whole week for views. I did some research into what was vegan, and apparently Reese's Puffs and Oreos are vegan.
Well, this is gonna be super easy.
As of recording this, I have already completed the 7-day vegan challenge, and I've kinda delayed making this video because being a vegan has changed me. So while I was doing the 7-day vegan challenge, I wrote this log after each day. I'm not going to read all of it, just the first and last day of the challenge, because days 2 through 6 can pretty much be summed up in So this is what I wrote at the end of day 1. My rations are already very low. I was not prepared for this. I'm the kind of person that will snack on Cheez-Its and trail mix throughout the day. But now I can't do that, because I had to think of the freaking animals. Every time I'm around food, I just have to keep screaming, vegan, vegan, in my mind so I won't unconsciously take a handful of Cheez-Its. I went shopping for food today, and everything I wasn't allowed to eat looked super good. I was even craving the food that I've never bought before, like Hot Pockets. Who likes Hot Pockets? I accidentally bought bread that contained honey, which I don't know if that's vegan or not. If we've learned anything from the Bee Movie is that bees have no purpose if they're not making honey. I'm in for a long week. I'm already fantasizing about what I'll eat as soon as the challenge is over. I'm thinking of 4x4 from In-N-Out. I'll try to write tomorrow. And then after that long week was over, this is what I wrote for day 7. In a few hours, all my problems will be fixed, and I will be an immortal being. But I'm gonna throw that all away because tomorrow I'm gonna drink milk again. I've completed the vegan challenge, but I don't feel that accomplished. The best way I can think to describe what I'm feeling is, oh, it's over. I remember when I started the challenge, I was thinking about all the food I was going to eat once I was done, but now I'm just not craving anything. Still, though, I'm probably never going to do this again. While I was doing the challenge, I went to Sprouts and bought microwavable veggie burgers, and when I cooked them up, they smelled like throw up. So see if you can tell how much I was trying to hold back throwing up in this video.
So today we are going to try these veggie burgers, and as I was cooking it, it sort of smelled like throw up. That almost made me throw up. So we have the burgers and tomatoes and lettuce. Oh, okay. I'm really hungry right now. This is a veggie burger. Okay. All right, I think we're gonna try this. We're gonna try and eat this. Hopefully, it, you know, tastes better than it smells.
By the way, that was vegan cheese in the video. I didn't just put normal cheese on the veggie burger, guys. Okay, I'm not a heartless creature. I care about cows. You know, the internet really loves to just hate on vegans. But I don't think it's as bad as the internet makes it out to be. Of course, there will always be jerks in any group of people. And you shouldn't think that you're better than someone else just because of what you eat. Also, I want to mention that while I did the vegan challenge, I would lose my breath just by going up the stairs. Some vegans would probably say that I was malnourished. And I probably was. This video was probably going to get some downvotes from some angry vegans, even though I'm about to compliment them. I think it takes a lot of self-control to do what vegans do. I don't know why anyone would purposely do that. I admire anyone that puts so much care and thought into their diet. I mean, ever since the challenge was finished, I've been trying to eat healthier, and I don't want to brag or anything, but I bought whole wheat waffles the other day, and I can feel my bones getting stronger. So, in conclusion, unfortunately, the 7-day vegan challenge, baby, solves all your problems. Did not solve all my problems. But even if it did solve all my problems, I still probably wouldn't be vegan. I would still drink milk. You know, because that's what makes ice cream and cheese and nachos. You think I'm exaggerating, but no, you would have to pay me a very pretty penny to get me to be full vegan. Like, no joke, a minimum of $1 billion. Am I glad I did the 7-day vegan challenge? Yes, I am.
Then we got some organic pancake syrup. I think pancake syrup itself is organic too, but we're just going to eat it again. Look, where does it say it? Non-GMO. 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 I haven't had a GMO in days.
And action.
So, Mr. James,
is it rolling?
Yes.
And action.
So, Mr. James, is it true that you wrote a book?
Oh, that thing? Yes, the rumors are true. One afternoon, I was just thinking to myself, why aren't I a published author yet? So I just jotted down some notes and doodles, and then I thought, you know, people should pay money for this.
So, like, it's just a bunch of pictures?
No, I added words, too. It's a collection of stories and opinions of mine, some of which I've already made into videos, and some that are completely original new stories. Like, one chapter is all about the science fair, and yeah, it is the same story I used in the YouTube video, but I also go more in-depth with the story, and I draw new pictures.
YouTubers have a reputation of writing bad books. Does this concern you?
Oh, bad books, huh? I'll have you know that my book was the number one best-selling book in literature, criticism, and theory. Do I know what that means? No, but did I beat Tyrant, Shakespeare on Politics? Yes. Does that mean I'm better than William Shakespeare himself? I'll let you be the judge when you pick up your copy of the book, link in the description.
I'll give you a clue, the answer is yes.
Are all authors as condescending as you?
Do you even know what that word means?
James, is there anything special that happens to people who order at VidCon?
Yeah, the people who pre-order at VidCon get a signed copy.
What about people who aren't going to VidCon?
Sucks to be them.
Cut, come on.
Haha, that was a good joke. So I actually am going to be selling signed copies. I'll be signing the first 1,000 copies to people who pre-order the book on my website. Check the link in the description. Also, speaking of my site, I've revamped the whole thing and got a bunch of new merchandise. Check it out if you have some free time. Christmas is right around the corner, guys. There's also non-signed copies available if you just want to pre-order it regularly. Or you can wait until August when the book comes out and buy it at Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore. And depending on how well these signed copies sell, I'll release more. We'll see. If you're interested, then I'll update everything on Twitter, so follow me on Twitter to be updated. Anyway, authors sure can be stuck up sometimes. Like this one time when this pretty well-established author was coming to my town and was doing a signing. I say well-established, but I'm sure if I said his name, you guys wouldn't actually know who he is. Anyway, at his signing, he gave an hour-long talk, and he said he wasn't going to do a Q&A segment because he said he'd been an author for so long that he felt that he already answered every question ever. Okay, Mr. Yahoo Answers, sorry our questions bothered you so much. And then after you listen to him talk, you gotta go up to meet him to get a book signed, but he was the most stereotypical I'm too good for you celebrity I've ever seen. When you got to his table, he didn't say anything to you, and if you wanted a picture, he wouldn't even look up at the camera. So my family has this picture of all of us standing and smiling next to this guy just looking down reading a book. So I will follow in that author's footsteps and only take pictures with fans while signing my book and looking like this. Contrast to that when I met Stephen Pastis. Pastis? I should have looked up how to say it. He's the creator of a comic strip called Pearls Before Swine, and all you need to know is that his comics are in the newspaper and he's really great. He came to visit Arizona, and I was 15 at the time, so I was making stick figure comics, and I wanted to impress Stephen, so I got out my ruler and protractor and I very carefully drew this comic. How was your run? Well, let's just say Justin is all pooped out. What happened?
I don't want to talk about it.
Get it? He pooped his pants. This isn't based off anything in real life, okay? I was 15. Shut up. I went to his book signing. He was really awesome. I showed him my comic. He laughed and he told me to keep going. And now I'm a YouTuber. I mean, it wasn't just what he said that got me into doing comics and YouTube. I wanted to do that way before I met him. Anyway, he was nice. Ironically enough, I was never a fan of reading, and I think a big part of it was that teachers forced you to read books you didn't want to read. So if this book becomes the next Romeo and Juliet or Grapes of Wrath, and teachers make their students write book reports on this book, then I'll make it easy for all of you. In the description of this video, I will create an already completed book report for this book. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. James, won't the teachers know if all the book reports are the same? Yes, they will, which is why I added some blank spaces for you to put in your own words. It's sort of like a Mad Lib that you turn in for homework. And this book report doesn't even have to be on my book. You can use it for any book. So if you have a book report due tomorrow, then check the link in the description. Trust me, you'll get at least an 80%. You know, the people who already pre-ordered this book are pretty ballsy. They don't even know what this book's about. For all they know, it could have just been a single picture of me laughing at all the money they gave me. But it's not that. I promise. That's just the inside sleeve. And that's the end of the video, everyone. I'll see you at VidCon. So me and TJ had to sleep a whole night in the axe-smelling tent. Every breath I could taste the smell, and I just got more and more angry. The night finally passed, and I woke up early in the morning before everyone else, so I could start with my master revenge plan. Was I tired? Maybe. But that's a sacrifice you have to make for vengeance. Every campsite had a water fountain coming out of the ground, connected to a PVC pipe. I found the biggest Ziploc freezer bag I could find and started to fill it up with water. It was obviously a slow process. I had plenty of time to reconsider. To think about what TJ said or what would happen after I got my revenge. But nothing stopped me. I was a squeaky-voiced, hormone-induced monster. Once the bag was full, I went back to my tent and woke TJ up. He got up and I told him to watch this. TJ actually had no part in the revenge plan. I just wanted to suck him down with me. I think TJ actually didn't want to get revenge. I ran towards the mega log tent and hid behind a real tent that was right next to the log one. Everyone was still inside. TJ still had no clue what I was doing. Until I chucked the bag over the real tent. If everything went according to plan, the bag would break on the roof and the water would sink through the openings. And then they'd be super wet, LOL. That was the plan. I never saw the carnage my creation had done. I was worried that I'd completely miss the log tent. I never played any sports as a kid, so just making it over the first tent would have been an accomplishment. But the fact that everyone started screaming and one boy yelled, "Micah, I'm gonna kill you!" I knew it must have been the most perfect shot. Did I stay around and laugh at their stupid, guilty faces? No. Me and TJ ran away as fast as we possibly could, without looking back. We sprinted off into the woods before any 15-year-old saw us. We just kept running and running, making sure to get as far away from camp as possible. And on the way, I kinda threw up a little. TJ, being the good friend that he was, thought I was unfit to run, so he decided that we should hide in some bushes. After about 5 minutes, nobody came. "Should we head back to camp?" "No." "Yeah, you're right." So we kept running, until we found the lake where scouts could canoe in. Me and TJ both thought this was a good place to stop, so we sat by the lake and talked for a few hours. Because in a week, TJ and his family were going to move away to China for 2 years, and I knew I wouldn't see him again for a long time, so I wanted to spend every moment I had with him. We were just a couple of bros being real with each other, skipping rocks and talking about our feelings. And then that night, the 15-year-old's tent got axe-bombed. So I guess it wasn't them. Oh, and remember how I threw up after running so much? Well, apparently there was a sickness going around camp that all the camp instructors got, and about 50% of the scouts got it too. And lo and behold, one of the 15-year-olds wasn't feeling so well when he went to bed that night. And then the sudden jolt awake and the cold water made him throw up. Yay!
So originally I was going to make a video talking about Boy Scouts because I was a Boy Scout, but then as I was writing the script I thought about all the fun things I did as a Cub Scout. So here we are. Cub Scouts is something you can do before you're old enough to be a Boy Scout. It's not required to do Cub Scouts to be a Boy Scout. It's just if you're up to it or if your parents signed you up, you can do it. Now you're already pretty young when you can start doing Boy Scouts. It's why it's called Boy Scouts, not Man Scouts. You can start doing Cub Scouts when you're 7. At what point does it just become babysitting in uniform? So all you people watching over the age of 7, let me tell you what you missed out on. Unlike Boy Scouts that wear a tan uniform, Cub Scouts wear a dark blue uniform. Now there are 4 ranks to the Cub Scouts. There were some requirements you had to do to go up the ranks, but if you went to the meetings every week, you'd be fine. You didn't have to do anything on your own time. And even if you did all the requirements in the rank, you still had to be in the rank for at least a year. So basically the ranks were based on your age. When you were 7 years old in first grade, you were a Tiger Scout. The second graders were the Wolf Scouts, the third graders were the Bear Scouts, and the fourth graders, aka the really cool ones because you're the oldest. Actually, before I tell you, just guess what the mascot for the fourth and final rank of Cub Scouts is. Leave your guesses in the comment box below. Just kidding, don't do that. I don't care. We have a tiger, a wolf, and a bear. That rhymed. What animal is cooler than all 3 of those? I'll tell you. Nothing. And that was the mascot.
There was no mascot.
Welcome to the real world, fourth graders! There's no such thing as cartoon anthropomorphic animals. So if you did guess anything in the comments, you were wrong. I told you not to guess. The fourth and final rank of Cub Scouts was called Weebalos. Weeb-alos. Very fitting name. It goes Tiger, Wolf, Bear, Weebalos? What kind of animal is that? Apparently it's supposed to stand for We Be Loyal Scouts, cause we talk like pirates. Don't worry, Cub Scouts, I'll make you a mascot for the Weebalos. Here, it's a made-up animal for a made-up word. Use it however you like. The Wikipedia page also talked about a bobcat badge, but I don't remember doing that, so that's whatever, it's not important. I can't even remember what we did as Cub Scouts. We would just meet at some person's house, I think it was one of the kids' moms, and she just had some activity for us to do outside, and we would just play. My mom told me that she was my scout leader for a year, but I don't remember that. I do remember we talked about bike safety, and I remember I fell off my bike a lot. I still got the award, though. Each rank had a handbook that said what activities you would do, and I looked on Google for pictures of the handbook, and I found these books with gritty, serious, tough covers, and I was shocked because the handbooks I grew up with had the mascots on them, and I liked it! The old books were cute and had pictures! You're not trying to get rid of the mascots, are you, Cub Scouts? I think it's funny that each mascot gets progressively unhealthier, which is why my Weebalo mascot looks the way it does. And I think I might be suppressing this memory, but every time we went up a rank, there would be this award ceremony thrown by the leaders, and I think we metaphorically drank the blood of the mascot. I mean, it was really just fruit juice, but...
Hello.
Hey, TJ.
Hey, James.
Do you remember Cub Scouts?
Yeah.
Did we, whenever we went up the ranks, did we metaphorically drink the blood of the mascot?
I think that's just something our leaders did. Like, some leaders chose to do it and ours did, but I don't think everyone did it.
Oh, we had weird leaders.
Yeah, I guess we did.
Okay, bye, TJ. So another thing we did as Cub Scouts was go to this thing called Cub Scout Day Camp. I don't know if it was just an Arizona thing, but I hated it. Cub Scout Day Camp took camping and made it unfun. And surprisingly, even as a 7 and 8 year old, I loved camping. Really, Jane? Someone who sits in front of the computer all day drawing Pokemon? You like toughing it out and sleeping in the woods? Yes! Oh, yes! If you've never been camping, get on that! I'm talking about real camping, though, not this day camp. Cub Scout Day Camp was during the summer, an Arizona summer, and we would get up super early, like 8 o'clock, eat breakfast at home, and then you and your whole troop carpooled for about 2 hours to camp. There were a bunch of other Cub Scout troops that met there too, it was a pretty big thing. You were supposed to pack your own lunch, and all the other boys had really cool lunches, like Lunchables and Go-Gurts and, ironically, Subway. I was jealous of kids with Subway sandwiches, and all my mom packed me was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on wheat bread. So before the day even starts, I'm already in a bad mood. You start the day sitting in this big auditorium, but it's outside. The leaders would tell you to drink lots of water, and they actually gave all the troops a bag of water balloons, and they wanted us to throw them at each other because that would keep us moist and not die of heat stroke. But water balloons are stupid because 90% of the time they don't even break on impact. You're just beating some poor kid to death with a bag of water. Then you would separate into your troop, and there was a rotation of activities for you to do all day. We ate dinner, and then we went back to the auditorium, and some of the leaders put on a play. I mean, it was a pretty dumb play, but I was invested in the story. But then at 10 p.m., you went home. You didn't even get to sleep in a tent. Sleeping in a tent is one of the most fun things about camping.
And also, the whole time, we didn't get a campfire, because it's dangerous to have fire around 7 to 10-year-olds or something. But they did let us do archery, because that's safe. Then the next day, you went back and you did it all over again. And then you would do it for a third day, too. So 3 days of this. 3 days of people throwing water balloons at you, and you can't get them back because you have a weak throwing arm. And you're probably wondering, James, what's with all the complaining? This sounds like fun. I mean, sure, other kids probably had fun. I might have been a little dramatic as an 8-year-old. One time on the second day of camping, I was clumsy and I kept falling off the rocks that I was climbing on, and I kept getting all these scrapes and bruises and they really hurt. And then we went swimming. That was one of the activities. There was a swimming pool. But just being the little punk kid that I was like, no, I don't want to go swimming. So they made me sit off to the side and they said I couldn't swim. But then later I was like, I want to go swimming now. After you swam, the leaders told you to check your shoes for scorpions, and I remember I didn't check because I hated everyone. And you know the play the leaders put on at the end of the day? It was split up into 3 parts, 1 part for each day. So it was left on a cliffhanger. I wanted to go see it, but everyone else in the troop wanted to play with water balloons. And I never found out how the play ended. The next morning, when I was supposed to leave for the third day, I told my mom that I didn't want to go, and she had to tell the carpool that her son didn't want to go because he's a huge pussy. And then afterwards, when they were handing out the awards, I didn't get a single award because I didn't go the third day. So I didn't finish any of the activities. And then I never went back to Cub Scout Day Camp since. And that's why I hated it.
One time, me and a group of buddies were driving through Texas, and we passed a building that looked like the Whataburger corporate office. Just to be sure, I checked my phone and discovered, yeah, we did just drive past the Whataburger corporate office. But what I found interesting was that the building had hundreds of one-star reviews. After some investigation, I found that these reviews weren't coming from the Whataburger corporate staff. No, these reviews were from once loyal customers who in one way or another had a negative experience at a Whataburger and were going to take this issue to the top! Reading people's wordy laments about their terrible fast food experiences has become a hobby of mine. And it's not just Whataburger. Every fast food corporate office has hundreds of one-star reviews. These people have been wronged by a billion-dollar company, and the only way they can get back at them is calling them stupid. The team at blah 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 have no intelligence whatsoever. I ordered 3 large lemonades, and all 3 spilled in the inside of my car because the cup holder was way too flimsy. I told the manager named Josh, and all he said he could do was say he's sorry. Sorry isn't going to clean up the mess caused by their stupidity! This guy spilled 3 lemonades all over his car, and instead of going, ah, I'm so stupid, he went, ah, Josh is stupid! This just goes to show that you could do your job perfectly and still have angry customers. Also, what did you expect Josh to do? Hey, I just spilled all that lemonade you gave me in that cup holder. Oh my goodness. How could I be so stupid? I forgot to turn off spill mode. Bring your car out back and I'll get a straw and then I'll suck it dry.
No need to thank me. That's what fast food employees are for.
I can't talk about fast food without bringing up a small local sandwich shop in my area. So here are some of my favorite one-star Suaboy reviews. We went to the location in blah blah blah. We had 30 minutes to close. I know, sucks, but there was a huge regional wrestling match and there were some starving boys. I walked in and let them know we had 20 sandwiches to order. We didn't have crazy expectations. Substituting meat, forget tomatoes if you're out. We don't need toasted, let's just feed these boys. 9 sandwiches in, the sweetest girl who was making our food said her manager said, shut it down, and they're not making the rest of the order. The manager had the employee in tears, and 9 boys didn't get food. I was mind blown. We offered big tips, gave free oil changes to employees working hard to make money. I run a mechanic shop and stay late for customer a lot. We didn't have crazy expectations. We just wanted a whole catering order 30 minutes before close. I know some people are going to be thinking, you're a business that's still open, so you have to do what the customer says. But I want those same people to ask their mother to make them 20 sandwiches at 9:30 p.m. and let me know what she says. And if those 9 boys were still upset, they should have just suplexed the manager into a table and then made the cold cut combo themselves. I placed an order online for 2 footlongs. I walked in to pick up my order, and I was thankful I didn't leave a tip. I received 1 footlong, but ordered 2. It's very clear on the receipt that was attached to the package. I showed it to the woman working behind the counter, and she laughed and said, oh, I didn't see that. Let me get that for you.
Not sure why she missed that. Has never happened to me before. Is she on something or does she not know how to read English? I had to stand there and wait for her to make the other foot long.
And then this person continues to write a whole 500-word manifesto.
Are they on drugs? Can they read English?
Jeez. Do you think this reviewer is going to tell their grandkids about this story?
And then I had to stand next to the sneeze guard for 2 minutes.
Okay, Grandma, can we go?
And they forgot the mayo!
There are a whole bunch of lengthy reviews just like this, and for these types of reviews, I, like, start thinking about these people psychologically. I feel like these people either have something else going on or nothing else going on. I'm sorry that your lunch was ruined, but if this is the biggest problem in your life, you're doing all right. And maybe this wouldn't have happened if you left a tip. I went to the location at blah, blah, blah. The guy Frank there needs to take some customer service classes. He is not friendly, and when I told him he should be more friendly to his customers, he told me to go ahead and call whoever I wanted to complain. Frank, I love you. You don't need to take customer service classes. You need to be teaching them. IDK, who was working at around 9:45 on May 17th, but somebody needs to give them a hug. I pull up to the window to pay, and there was three girls standing there doing nothing. One of them mumbled my total and stuck out her hand. I gave her my card and she did her thing. Then she handed me a crumpled mess of a bag and two drinks with like zero ice. No have a nice night. No thanks for stopping in. Not even a hello. IDK, if all three of those girls lives together and somebody ran over their dog or something, but all three of them looked like they absolutely hated being there and me ordering my meal was the biggest inconvenience they could have experienced. I feel so bad for these workers. They need a hug. But also screw them one star. I can't believe this McDonald's took my review down, but that's okay, I will recite it. They had no barbecue sauce for their nuggets the whole Memorial Day weekend. For all you barbecue sauce lovers out there, when you went to this location on any of those days and asked for barbecue sauce and you were told they didn't have any more, you must have felt crushed like I did. Like, what was the point of ordering nuggets and finding out they didn't have barbecue sauce afterwards? Why didn't they disclose that fact before ordering the nuggets and paying for it? I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to take advantage of us, just to get that sale. What, the employees do take the barbecue sauce to their homes to use for their own Memorial Day weekend barbecues? This is one memorable, unfavorable moment that will be remembered for years to come. You know, there are many who are barbecue sauce lovers out there that went through the same feeling I did when I ordered 3 20-piece nuggets just to find out afterwards they didn't have any barbecue sauce. Like, if you agree. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but do you think they're out of barbecue sauce because the world's number one barbecue sauce lover keeps ordering there? Going through all the trouble to write a review and then recite the review again, all because they were out of barbecue sauce, seems like a lot, but 60 nuggets with no sauce on a national holiday is a tragedy, I'll give you that. I love that this guy didn't even consider that they were just out of sauce and instead went full conspiracy mode, thinking the employees were hoarding the sauce for their own barbecue. You gotta have barbecue sauce for your barbecue. It's in the name. I'm not going to act like every fast food restaurant is in the right all the time, because I've had my fair share of terrible fast food experiences too. I once ordered a burger from Sonic, and they gave me the burger with no meat. And I went, dang, well, that's how my day is gonna go, I guess. I didn't write a lengthy review to hopefully be seen by someone at corporate. I don't know. I got other problems. If reading these reviews has taught you anything, it's that these fast food workers have to deal with all sorts of customers going through all sorts of problems. So please be the customer who shows a little compassion. They are handling your food after all. Leave a like if you agree. My child works for Whataburger, hasn't been paid since December 2nd. Today is 1-4 and still no paychecks. We've been told lies saying paycheck is coming to the store, then FedEx is delivering it, and still nothing. He's only 18, so I feel like they're trying to get over on him. Not to mention the shift manager Liz is having an affair with some of the employees. Yo, what? A burger? Thank you all for watching the video. If you enjoyed it, then I highly recommend reading some of these corporate office fast food reviews yourself. They're a real treat to read. Just some of the passion that these people have needs to be studied. Obviously, not everyone who leaves a one-star review is an obnoxious Karen, but the ones who go out of their way to review a corporate office are some of my favorites.
Thanks again for watching, and wear your seatbelt.
Hey, this is kind of like a part two video. I mean, you don't have to have seen the part one video to understand what I talk about in this video. But I mean, if you haven't watched part one, you should. So I used to work at Subway, and to be honest, about 80% of the customers were fine. Sometimes they would do something that would just personally annoy me, like ask for a meatball on flatbread. So don't feel too bad for me. Like sometimes people would ask me, can I have a turkey with lettuce, tomatoes? Whoa, slow down! What kind of bread? Foot long or 6-inch? What kind of cheese? Is it toasted? Then we'll talk about vegetables! And every time someone brought in a list, there would always be something missing on it. Always! I never had someone come in with a complete list. I would ask someone, what kind of cheese? And they would say, they didn't specify. Well then, if they didn't care enough to remember cheese, I guess they'll get Swiss. If anyone watching is currently working at a Subway, then feel free to use these tricks. If someone asked me,
what kind of cheese do you recommend?
I would always say provolone, because it's the easiest cheese to pull apart with gloves on. Really, if anyone asked me what I recommended, I would just tell them the easiest thing for me to do. But even after I gave my insightful provolone cheese recommendation, sometimes people would still say,
I'll take American.
Why do you even ask me what cheese I would recommend if you're not going to take it seriously? Another thing that would annoy me is when people would say the sandwich was all done, but they didn't put any sauce on it. So I would ask, any sauce? And then they would be like, oh yeah, mayonnaise. Oh, why did you tell me it was all done if it wasn't? Also, the receipt machine at the store took like 7 seconds to print out the receipt. So it would be very awkward every time I would ask people, do you want your receipt? And then they would say yes, and then we would just stare at each other until the receipt printed. So what I did every time someone swiped their credit card, I would just stare off into space, and in my head, I would count to 5. And then I would ask, do you want your receipt? And by the time they said yes, it was like magic. As soon as they said yes, the receipt printed. At Subway, you only work with one other person. So if someone got annoyed and said, let me talk to your manager, I would just look at them and go, listen, I've been here the longest. The only other person in this store is a 16-year-old girl, and she technically isn't old enough to use a toaster, so I'm probably your best bet. I'm the manager. Like, do people think the manager will automatically take their side and give them free stuff? Yes, actually they do think that, because it happens all the time. I would consider myself a pretty laid-back Subway employee. I didn't like to be stingy with people, even though I was disobeying the Subway formula on purpose. Oh, you want more than 6 olives on your foot long? Sure. Here, have a 5th slice of cheese. $1.50 for avocado? I'll charge you 75 cents, buddy. I probably shouldn't be saying these things, you know, in case this whole YouTube thing flops and I need a job. So I wasn't really strict on the rules. You know those fast food workers who are strict? No, we won't serve breakfast at 10:02. Get out. But being pretty laid back still didn't stop people from being annoying. So this one person comes in and asks for 2-foot-long pastrami sandwiches. And pastrami is our most expensive sandwich. It's about $10 for a foot long. And guys, the pastrami is super good, but I wouldn't pay for it. I mean, it's good, yeah, but I'm not paying $10 for a foot long. It's not worth it. So this guy, I make his 2 sandwiches, I ring him up, and I say, that'll be $20. And I guess he didn't look at the price of the sandwich on the menu, or he thought we still did the $5 foot longs, because he said to me, I ain't paying for that. And this is when I was just starting out. I only had like a week of experience. And after he said that, I responded, well, shoot. I guess you're not paying for it. I didn't know people could do that. Hey, I want this. All right, that's $20. Nah, you don't want it? No, I want it. I'm just not paying for it. Okay, no, but actually, we did come up with a compromise. He told me that he had $12, so he ended up paying for one of the sandwiches, and I got to eat the other one. So it all worked out. This one time I was making a sandwich for a guy with a very heavy accent, and he asks for onions on the side. No big deal. We at Subway put vegetables in little cups all the time. I actually got a soup cup because the on the side cups are teeny tiny, and I start doing my thing, but then he says, no, on the side. And I think, oh, he's getting a foot long. He probably wants onions on half of it, but not the other. So I start putting onions on half the sub, but then again he says, no, on the side. At this point, I don't know what this guy wants. So I ask him, on the side of what? And then he screams, onions! And I never figured out what he was trying to say. This one old gentleman asks for sauce to be put on his vegetables, and normally we put it on top of the sandwich with the meat. And I didn't know if I heard him correctly, because I put the sauce on, and then I closed the sandwich. So your sauce would have been in the same place either way. One time, this woman tipped me and Corey $40. She wasn't annoying, I just want to sprinkle in some good customer stories. Okay, one time this Native American person came in, and I don't know if mentioning that was important to the story. He comes in and asks for 5-foot-long tunas. Okay, Tyler, just me and you, let's do this! And then when we're all finished, we ring him up and we say, anything else? And he says, 7 meatballs. What? He wanted 7 more sandwiches. But James, you're Subway. You're supposed to make people sandwiches regardless of how many they ask for. Yeah, I know, but the guy could have handled it differently. Normally for a platter, you have to call in at least an hour ahead, and that's only 5-foot-longs. This guy could have called ahead and said, hey, I'm getting 12 sandwiches, so just prepare yourselves. Mentally. I mean, we had so many customers waiting in line. No, we didn't. That's a lie. It was only him. But still, this one woman, I was making her sandwich, and for vegetables, she asked for extra lettuce. So I put on a big handful, but then she asks for more. So I put more on, more, and sprinkle some on, more! I won't be able to close the sandwich with any more lettuce. And she says, that's fine. All right, extra lettuce it is. So I ended up giving her an open sandwich with a mountain of lettuce. You know we do salads, right? When I was little, I always thought if I was working at a store and someone tried to rob me, I wouldn't give them any money. But now it's like, psh, I ain't risking my life for Subway. Here, take the cash register. So thankfully, I've never had anyone pull a gun on me, but I have caught people stealing from us. I was making someone's sandwich, and this one kid asks for just a water cup, so I gave it to him. So I go back to making a sandwich, and I just hear the fuzzy soda sounds being dispensed. And I look over, and the kid is putting soda in the cup. He didn't even try to hide it. When I put soda in a water cup, I at least wait for the employees to go in the back, but I didn't even say anything. I was just like, all right, man. This guy, I totally saw him take a bag of chips, and he hid it under the counter so I couldn't see. So when I rang up his sandwich, I asked, anything else? And he said, nope. Alright, whatever. Okay, last story. I was in the back, and was playing some Clash of Clans, and we have a computer that shows what the cameras see, and I see this woman who was eating there. She reached over the counter and took 3 large cups, and I did nothing to stop it. You know, I'm the kind of person that's like, the fast food employee is always right. Say if I was eating somewhere, and I asked for a chicken salad, and they said, we only have tuna salad. I'm the kind of person that's like, oh, well, I guess I'm having the tuna salad then.
You know, I've realized something. If I keep making videos about my life stories, then soon I'll run out of life to talk about. Which is why sometimes I'll agree to do a thing just so I can make a video about it later. Perks of being a YouTuber. So my mom is friends with this junior high school teacher. Kudos to any junior high school teachers watching. It amazes me that anyone would be okay sitting in a room with 27th graders and not even getting paid that much to do it. My mom was talking to her like moms do, and I guess I came up in conversation. And my mom told her that I wanted to be a math teacher, but then I became a YouTuber instead. So my mom's friend, I'll just make up a fake name for her, I'll just call her Mom's Friend. Mom's Friend comes up to me and says, hey, would you be interested in helping tutor some 7th and 8th graders? Ew. I think the only reason she chose me was because, 1, I'm good at math, duh, and 2, I'd be good with kids or something. I told her I'd do it because 7th and 8th graders are the worst kinds of people. Unless you watch my videos, then you're cool. I'll finally get to live my half-hearted dream of teaching kids math. Now, I didn't make this video to talk about math, okay? That's boring. Before I even started tutoring these kids, Mom's Friend asked if I wanted a chaperone on a field trip so I can get to know them. Okay, 7th and 8th graders are between the ages 11 and 13, aka the worst time to be alive as a human. You're going through puberty, you're super self-conscious, no one wants to be your friend. 7th grade is just one big popularity contest, and everyone's losing. No one looks back at themselves when they're in 7th grade and thinks, yeah, I was alright. There's definitely some Sevies watching right now thinking, oh, I'm not that bad. Doesn't matter who you are, you're gonna look back on these years and hate yourself. I remember when I was in the 7th grade, I noticed all the cool kids wore really low socks. The shorter the sock, the cooler you were. So I always wore the lowest sock possible. Most of the time, you couldn't even see the socks. It looked like I was wearing nothing. That's how cool I was. Sometimes, I put on girl socks because they were the lowest socks I could find. I was so cool. Anyway, I was going to be chaperoning these kids on a field trip. They were going to the big college here in Arizona. Can I just say ASU? And this was supposed to get them excited to learn and pursue a higher education. Kinda awkward bringing me along, the successful college dropout. Hey kids, you should go to college. It's important. I don't count though. And I didn't know what to expect on this field trip. YouTube says my biggest demographic is 18 to 24 year olds, but I don't think that's true. Because it's usually kids leaving comments and emailing me asking to collab. Either they're the loud minority, or there's a bunch of kids lying about their age on YouTube. I walk into the classroom, and everyone's head turns. Is that the odd ones out? Oh my goodness, that's the odd ones out! Kids started forming lines, they were taking pictures, they were hugging me, and I'm just kidding, that didn't happen. No one cared, they were all still talking in their clicks. With all the kids I've talked to over the internet, That sounded wrong. With all the kids I've talked to, I was hoping that one, at least one kid had seen my stuff. But nope. So I just sat in silence and played on my phone. We get on the bus. I don't remember where I said this, but on school buses, all the cool kids sit in the back. Well, this time the opposite was true, because I sat in the front. We arrive at the college. I go to this group of kiddos and I say, "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" And at that moment, I realized I sounded exactly like one of those adults who try to talk to kids but have no idea what to say. I was planning on them saying astronaut or doctor, and then I was going to say, "Well, you could learn that in college." That's what I was going to say. "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" They said nothing. They didn't say anything. They just looked at me like, why is this old guy trying to talk to us? So then I just walked away. All right, I need a new question. I wanted to somehow bring up, "Hey, I have over 1 million subs on YouTube." But that's tacky. You don't just start conversations like that. Sub counts have to come out naturally. So I went up to a new group of kids and I said, "So, do you guys watch any YouTube videos?" And most of the kids did the same thing, looking at me like I was weird. But one kid said, "Rice gum." Ugh, ew. Here's actually the story of how I met Rice Gum. So I was at VidCon, and all of a sudden, a huge crowd of people just goes running by. And I said, "Who's that?" And someone else said, "Rice Gum." And then I said, "Oh, who's that?" And I didn't really meet him. My friend Gabe did, though. So we were given a tour of this college, and it was actually kind of interesting because it was the college that I would have attended if I wasn't trying to save money. It was fun seeing what could have been. There were other junior highs doing tours at the same time, so we crossed paths with this preparatory school. I'm guessing it was a preparatory school because they were wearing uniforms. And this one kid in the other group just pointed to me saying, "The odd one's out! The odd one's out!" over and over, and I just said, "Hey," back to him. And that was it. We just kept walking. No pictures or high fives. Man, why couldn't have that kid been in my group? Preparatory kids are so much cooler. So we do the tour, and I was in the back not talking to anyone. We ate lunch, and there was actually a kid in my group who did know me. His name was Connor. I think he was too shy to talk to me at first. Thanks, Connor. Where were you when I asked your peers what they wanted to be when they grew up? But he was cool. We ate lunch together. The field trip was almost over, and I kept thinking, man, I did not connect with these kids, like, at all. Well, they are only 7th and 8th graders, so it's not like I need their approval. Hey kids, I have 1.8 million subs on YouTube! It was tacky to use my sub count to get validated by these children, but after I said that, everyone loved me. I think I made a good connection with them. And okay, all the kids I tutored that were failing math, 90% of the time, they weren't failing because they didn't understand the material. They were failing because they were missing assignments. So alright, I'm about to tutor everyone watching this video. And this goes for you college folks too. Kids? Turn in your work. Even if it's late, it's better than a zero. Alright, lesson's over. We're not gonna do an end card for this video because I wanted to show you guys something. Here are all the cards I made for the plushies. Good news if you live in the States, because they will most likely arrive before Christmas. Sorry if you live somewhere else. Also, if you ordered a custom signature, you're just gonna get one of these boys. We want to get them out before Christmas, but then we're going to send the special ones later, so you'll get two cards if you ordered special instructions.
Bobby, what do you have to say?
Also, another important announcement is I'm going to be taking a Christmas break. I have been working nonstop on videos since VidCon, so I am in desperate need of a break. I'm still going to be posting comics and maybe some other non-animated video if I can, but this is the only animated video this month, so I guess Merry Christmas. Can I say Merry Christmas? Whatever holiday you celebrate, just wear your seatbelt.
Look at that. This is my...
I haven't hung it up or anything. It's just on the floor.
Merry Christmas. Yeah, that's right. I said it. What are you going to do about it, atheists? Christmas carols are an integral part of creating the Christmas atmosphere. Okay, yes, I agree. It's annoying when radio stations play Christmas music directly after Halloween, but when December finally rolls around and Michael Bublé emerges from his cave, magic fills the air. And if you work in retail, you've probably already listened to every single Christmas song ever created. After many hours of research, I have found that there's two types of Christmas music. On one side, you have songs about Santa Claus, and on the other side, you have songs about Jesus. Isn't it funny that Santa is an anagram for Satan? Just something to think about. Christmas is easily the most sung about holiday. Halloween isn't even in a close second, but it's also the most diverse genre of music out there. You have songs like Away in a Manger and Silent Night that can put anyone to sleep, but under the same umbrella, you have Santa Baby and Christmas Don't Be Late by Alvin and the Chipmunks. I love Christmas carols, okay? It's one of the few good things left in this world that brings a smile to my face. But now I want to talk about the Christmas carols that don't make a lot of sense. Starting with the song Silent Night. Okay, sure, I've never given birth before, but I don't know if all is calm, all is bright is a good way to describe the process of childbirth. I get that it was Jesus and he's perfect, okay? But he's still a baby. Mary still had to go into labor. I don't know, I see all these nativity scenes with Jesus being the center of attention and Mary just off to the side with everyone else. But she just gave birth, you guys. Someone needs to build Mary her own manger to lay down in. Also, sleep in heavenly peace? Yeah, you're not going to do that ever again. So the song Last Christmas is about when Taylor Swift gave someone her heart for Christmas, but then on December 26th they re-gifted it to someone else, so then the very next year she gave it to someone special. I don't know what the moral of that song is, but it could have been about any holiday. They just happened to break up the day after Christmas. Last Earth Day, I gave you my heart. See, that still works. Walking in a winter wonderland? I have a question. Who is Parson Brown? Why is the first thing he says when he comes to life, "Hey, are you kids married?" No, man. But you can do the job when you're in town, if you know what I'm saying. Oh, Parson is a priest. He was asking, "Are you married? Because I'm a priest. I can marry you two. That's my job." Ah. Carol of the Bells? Now, I love this song, but honestly, I don't see how this counts as Christmas music. Have a Holly Jolly Christmas? What do you mean by kiss her once for me? Are you cheating on me? Baby, it's cold outside. Okay, now this one is extremely problematic. Why don't they just put a coat on? All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth, a hippopotamus, and you! I would not want to meet the person who made this Christmas list. Just saying. I'm getting nothing for Christmas. How did I not know about this song until just now? Alright, how many Christmas songs can say they got a movie based off of them? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? Yeah, it's a classic. Frosty the Snowman? Yeah, good choice. The Little Drummer Boy got a movie? Okay, fine, yeah, I'll count that. I think you're all missing the real classical Christmas song. Grandma got run over by a reindeer. In the song, it's canon that Grandma died, but at least in the movie, Grandma lived. She just got kidnapped by Santa because he was trying to hide the evidence. You know, no witnesses. I hope they don't make a Baby It's Cold Outside movie. Just an hour and a half of people not putting on jackets. Anyways, I have to keep this video extremely short if I want to get it out by Christmas. I hope you all have a good holiday, and if you don't celebrate Christmas, you're missing out on some great carols and questionable morals. Thanks for watching. I'm going to be taking some time off to celebrate Christmas with my family. Remember to buy that merch, and as always, wear your seatbelt. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92.
I'm 93. Do I still count?
No, Grandpa, we hate you. Just so you know, that gag was based off a comic I made back in 2014. So I wanted to make a Christmas video, but I didn't know what to talk about. So we're just going to sit here and roast marshmallows by this PNG of a fire. Do you guys know about that soccer game that happened in the middle of World War I on Christmas Day? And it was between two opposing sides, the Allies and the Central Powers? I'm not making this up. So, German and British troops were in the trenches, you know, fighting for their lives. They were in the middle of a war, after all. And on Christmas Eve, German troops started singing Christmas carols. Then the British troops responded singing their own Christmas carols. Then one thing led to another, and on Christmas Day, they started playing soccer. Well, the British troops would have called it football, and the German troops would have called it football. But I'm calling it soccer. Yeah, I know I'm a heretic. I don't think anything like that has happened in a war ever. Except for that one time in the Revolutionary War when everyone stopped fighting because the new Super Smash Brothers just came out. Merry feet! Merry feet! Tis not Falco! Wombo with combination!
Oh!
Where art thou? Okay, that was obviously a joke. Melee didn't come out for at least, like, another year. Stupid. Anyway, what I'm wondering is, do you think anyone during that game felt a little bit awkward? So, how's the war? Oh, you're fearing for your life? Well, that's good. That's good. That means we're doing a good job. Do you think whoever won the game of soccer bragged to the other team?
Ha ha! Yes! First we beat you at football, next, the world.
Ah, dang it, my marshmallow burned. Does the story of Rudolph count as a fable? What would the moral of Rudolph be? I think it would be, being different from society will be punished unless it's exploitable. Okay, I stole that quote from something I saw on the subreddit, I'm 14 and this is deep. How come no one sings any songs about any of the other reindeer? Rudolph saved Christmas once, and like, he didn't do it alone. Just because he could see through the snow, which, by the way, wouldn't have been useful in Arizona, didn't mean he carried Santa's sleigh all by himself. But no, just because you were bullied as a kid, you get your own song. Well, enough about you going down in history, Rudolph. I'm going to make my own song about Prancer. Do-do-do. Prancer, the normal nose reindeer, had a very normal nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, yep, that's a nose. All of the other reindeer respected him for meeting the expectations of what a normal reindeer should be like. They always let little Prancer play on his reindeer bike. Okay, I'll stop. What if the reason Rudolph had a shiny nose was because Rudolph's mom had an affair with a clown? That was based off a comic I made in 2014. Why did the three wise men bring baby Jesus gold, Frankenstein, and myrrh? What kind of baby would want that? Okay, that was also based off a comic I made in 2014. Man, 2014 was just my year. Please read my comics. You know what? I'm not done talking about Rudolph. You guys have all seen the stop-motion movie they made about him in the 60s, right? You know, about the elf who wants to be a dentist. So who wouldn't?
Why weren't you at elf practice?
Well, there's one scene in the movie where Yukon Cornelius sacrifices himself to kill the abominable snowman, and he saves all of his friends, and also indirectly saves Christmas, but whatever, he doesn't get a song. But then later in the movie, he just walks through the front door, and everyone's wondering how he survived, and Rudolph even says,
But you went over the side of a cliff!
And then Yukon tells everyone the answer,
Didn't I ever tell you about bumbos?
Bumbos bounce! And then everyone just laughs it off like it was a hilarious joke and doesn't ask him any more questions. Even as a kid, I thought that was a stupid explanation. What does that mean, bumbos bounce? Like, did you two fall off the cliff, and then when you hit the bottom, just trampoline yourself all the way back up? Oh wait, no, I think I know what it means. It means the writers didn't want to kill off a character, so they just came up with a plot device to make him live. You know, because you can't have death in a kid's movie! No one dies! Not even the bad guy dies. How does Santa deliver to houses without chimneys? I think Tim Allen tried to explain it once. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this video. I kept it short so that way I have more time to spend Christmas with my family. And it also gives me more time to wrap presents. Because, you know, I'm just terrible at wrapping.
At my Subway, you would spend your entire 5 to 6 hour work shift with only one other person. And you didn't get to pick that peculiar partner you were spending your precious period with. So that meant I was stuck with some crazy characters. And one of those characters was really, really into that new age snorting healing crystals kind of stuff. And he would specifically talk to me about it because I was the only other person there and all we could do for fun was watching bread rise. Since I was contractually obligated to stay, I would just listen to him ramble about how he thought the universe worked. He told me about chakras and how easy it was to open your third eye through LSD. He told me about scrying using black mirrors and that it's a common misconception that you can get stuck in the mirror, but that's just a myth. That doesn't actually happen. Which is a good thing, because getting stuck in a mirror is something I'm constantly worried about as an adult. Oh, and he told me that every illness is in your head and that hospitals can already cure anything, but they're not going to because if they cure you, they're going to lose a customer. So he's just going to stick to his essential oils and non-vaccinated immune system, thank you very much. Listen, you can believe whatever you want to believe, as long as it's not hurting yourself or others, okay? But denying modern medicine? No! No! No, you can't! Do that! No! Since there were still 4 hours of the workday left and I didn't want to argue with him, I would just respond with, uh-huh. He didn't do crack, or meth, or any hard drugs that I know of that would alter his perception of reality. Even though he didn't trust hospitals or doctors, he really believed in the benefits of medical marijuana. If you're ever wondering what kind of person is making your sandwiches, yes, they did give this guy a license to touch your food.
Whoa, dude. My sandwich tastes like colors.
I learned something about myself that day, and that is, I'm obsessed with crazy people. Even though I didn't believe a word he said, I would still ask him questions just to get him talking. Wait, so you're telling me that everything in Naruto is real? Something about talking to him and hearing his perspective was fascinating. This human that I share a planet with exists. What is a crazy person? A crazy person is not someone who has a weird hobby or owns a pet snake. A crazy person is someone who, despite having an astronomical amount of evidence pointing to one idea, believes in the latter. I'm not a psychologist, and maybe I should have consulted one before making this video, but I think crazy people have an unhealthy amount of unchecked distrust and paranoia. I don't know where to even begin talking to crazy people. Their worldview is just so much different than mine. A crazy person will think that someone who has no reason to is lying. NASA's lying about the moon landing. I don't trust NASA. Hospitals are lying about medicine. I don't trust doctors. The government's lying about... well, a lot of things. They're lizard people! Okay, that one might be true. Thankfully, I don't personally know any crazy people. Well, okay, some of my friends are into astrology, but they still get vaccinated, so... you know, you win some, you lose some. However, on the internet, there's an overwhelming abundance of crazy people. I'm guessing crazy people don't go outside because they think the government will target them with directed energy weapons or something. Yeah, only crazy people stay inside wasting hours of their life behind computer screens. One of my guilty pleasures is that while I'm working, I will listen to crazy people talk for hours. It's weirdly my version of ASMR. I've tried listening to podcasts and audiobooks or anything that's good for my brain, but there's something so fascinating about listening to a 50-year-old genuinely tell you about his alien abduction. And it only has 300 views? This man was contacted by aliens, people! Why isn't he on the cover of Time magazine? YouTube will teach you everything you need to know about aliens. Did you know that aliens traveled millions of light years to build pyramids, stomp on our corn, and abduct a couple of crackpots? There's videos of people who will tell you in full confidence about the gray and praying mantis aliens living among us. I mean, the videos barely have any views, but they exist. Most of the views are from me. Okay, all of them. I don't understand how people think the moon landing was faked. There is so much evidence proving that the moon isn't even real. Wake up, sheeple! I gotta be honest, I don't think flat earthers are real. I think they're all just a bunch of trolls trying to get people like me to hate humanity. I'm no rocket scientist, but I know that our understanding of space and gravity is so beyond what shape the earth is. I'm amazed how much free information is available to people, but they still choose not to believe it. So I'm sorry, I just can't accept that flat earthers are real. I mean, I have nothing to back up this idea, though. I guess it's just a crazy theory of mine. Wait. Here's a lighthearted conspiracy for you. Some people think that the creators of the Sonic movie purposely made the design of Sonic bad in the first trailers as a marketing ploy. Everyone was outraged about the bad designs and ended up talking about it, giving the movie free promotion. Meanwhile, the executives were planning to use the better-designed Sonic all along. The evidence for this is... well, I'm talking about the Sonic movie right now, so I'm contributing to the theory that this was all for publicity. Another piece of evidence is... look at this. What is this? There's no way that any executive or anyone with two eyeballs would okay this ever. And honestly, I might have believed this conspiracy theory if this movie didn't exist. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. But because it's current year and these types of things can still get past test screenings, I think sometimes Hollywood is just no good. I could be totally wrong though. If anyone watching worked on this movie and wants to be a whistleblower, let me know in the comments. Another rabbit hole I fell down was discovering a group of people called targeted individuals. Targeted individuals are a group of people that think the government is sending NSA agents to harass them. And this isn't just the American government, it turns out that every government in the world is harassing random citizens. They claim that they're being harassed because the government is trying to silence them for speaking the truth, when in reality, they're not speaking anything remotely true. A targeted individual will say things like, "People keep following me! There's a white van that's been parked in front of my house for hours! The government's been using electromagnetic radiation to transmit sounds and thoughts into my head!" And the whole time I'm watching these people, I'm thinking, "Yo, that sounds like schizophrenia, my dude. I don't know your life. Maybe you just got out of a really bad cult and you do have stalkers following you. Okay, yes, that happens. But it's not the government. One targeted individual I saw said that the government attacked them with a directed energy weapon and that they've been having migraines and coughing up blood. And I'm just flabbersmacked that someone actually believes this. How do you tell them, yo, the government's not harassing you. You probably have something going on in your digestive system. You need to see a doctor and a psychiatrist. And it's easy to point and laugh and make fun of these people, but after hearing their stories, I just feel bad for them. They are going through some major mental stuff, and I think they just need a friend to talk to. Most conspiracies can be disproven with a little bit of research, so it's important to think critically and not immediately believe everything you hear online. And if there's not enough data to make a judgment, then it's okay to say, I don't know, or I need to look into this further before making a conclusion. Viral misinformation punishes everybody, so it's important to do research, tests, and evaluations to form a concrete judgment before you hit that retweet button. There is one conspiracy theory, I believe, and that is that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill... If you're one of those kids that spends too much time on that darn computer machine, then conventions are a great place to get the recommended amount of human interaction with others who share a similar interest. Or at least, they were. You might have seen some conventions in the news recently, you know, the ones like VidCon, Comic-Con, and E3. But did you know there's conventions for all sorts of different things, like coin collecting, pens, and degenerates? The first convention I ever went to was in Arizona called Phoenix Comic-Con. I was 16 years old, and it, no exaggeration, changed my life. I had heard a lot about geek culture online, but Phoenix Comic-Con was the very first time I witnessed it in its fullest. I was a very sheltered kid. It was the first time I'd seen a brony and a furry and whatever this is in the wild. That changes a person. I was told that it was not cool to like geeky things, and as a 16-year-old, I tried really hard to make it seem like I didn't secretly like a bunch of geeky things. But people at Comic-Con just embrace nerd culture like they didn't care what people thought of them or something. Is that allowed? I guess when I was 16, I was hyper-desperate to receive everyone's approval. I was so hyper-desperate that while walking around my first convention, I was stressing out that I wasn't in cosplay. Oh, all these pop culture characters are judging me because I'm not wearing any makeup. To this day, I still haven't ever cosplayed, but it looks like a lot of fun. If I did cosplay, I would want to go as this quadrupedic horse. Also Spark from Pokemon Go. I went to one panel called How to Make Steampunk Weapons, but instead of teaching us how to weld real-life weapons powered by steam, the people on the panel taught us how to paint Nerf guns to make them look like they were powered by steam. And that was, no exaggeration, the most disappointing panel I've ever been to. There was also a panel for bronies, but I was too chicken to go. Did I mention that my grandfather, who I'm named after, got drafted into World War II when he was 18? He fought in a war so I could go to a comic convention and be too nervous to talk to bronies. What a different life we had. At most conventions, people in the expo hall will sell a lot of super cool unlicensed merchandise. Yeah, a lot of artists will sell prints and plushies and oven mitts with characters and titles they probably didn't get the license to sell, but if it's at a convention or on Etsy, then for some reason it's okay. I've always felt weird about buying that type of merch. On one hand, you shouldn't be allowed to make money off of someone else's intellectual property without the owner's consent. But on the other hand, look at this cool Bowser wallet, Bowser print, and Bowser bandana that I own. And this body pillow. It's a moral gray area because the people buying this type of merch are the hardcore fans. They know of the property these characters came from. They probably already own licensed merch of the character. The artist isn't claiming to have created the character either. It's a mutual understanding between buyer and seller that we both think Bowser is cool and we just want to buy as much merch as possible. You kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis, but let me just say this to get it out there. You're not allowed to sell bootleg.onesout merch. Phoenix Comic-Con actually had to change the name of their convention to Phoenix Fan Fusion because the people at the San Diego Comic-Con didn't like that Phoenix was stealing their name, so these conventions that don't care about stealing other people's copyright are forcing others to respect their copyright. Interesting. As some of you may know, since 2012, I have become a little more successful, and in 2019, I got invited to be a guest at Phoenix Fan Fusion, which is my home convention. The really crazy part is the convention put me in the celebrity line, like next to the people where you have to pay for photos and autographs. I didn't charge my fans for anything, so that made my line appear a lot longer than others. And my line was, no exaggeration, right next to Jeff Goldblum's line. I was gonna make eye contact with Jeff Goldblum! Jeff showed up for a couple hours on Saturday, and when he came out from backstage, everyone in his line and my line started wooing and clapping, and even I was like... And then Jeff took a look at my line, then looked at me, and then gave me a nod of approval, saying, "Not bad, kid." He didn't say it out loud, but I could tell he said it with his eyes. He also said that I looked kinda cute, so, oh, thanks, Jeff. The first time I went to VidCon, that also, no exaggeration, changed my life. Again, it was the first time I met all these YouTubers that I've been watching for years, and, okay, I'll admit, at first I was kinda fanboy-y, but I've gotten completely desensitized meeting other YouTubers and feel no joy anymore. When I meet another YouTuber, I say, "Oh, you make videos in your bedroom? Me too." People know that you're a bedwetter too, right? No? That's just me then. If you've ever given me something at a convention, then you'll be happy to know that I've kept everything I've ever been given. Unless you're the guy that gave me a plastic baggie full of water and other junk and called it a homemade snow globe. I used to collect snow globes, so it was a nice sentiment, but I didn't want to take it home with me and have it inevitably break and get all the important fan art wet. So I chucked it. And as I'm telling you this, there's some poor kid out there going, "Hey, he's talking about my snow globe. He threw it away?" And now I feel bad, so...
Here, I'll mail this to you and you can get a taste of your own medicine.
I don't know why this is such a popular question, but a lot of times people will ask me, "What's the weirdest fan interaction you've ever had?" I think they think that some of you are cringy. I never have an answer for them because all my fans are super nice. Yeah, someone gave me a bag of water, but that's not weird, that's nice! Okay, I have received fan mail from a prison, which is true, so I guess some of you aren't law-abiding citizens. Going to conventions and meeting fans and being on panels is a lot of fun, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't give you a lot of time to really experience the convention. Since 2017, when I would go to a convention, it would mean I was working. I still had a fun time, but I didn't really get to just relax with friends. That is, until I went to a convention last December called MFF, which stands for Midwest Fur Fest. Now, James, did you go to a furry convention? Well, I went with some friends to a furry convention so that I could actually enjoy a convention and not have to work. Although I still got recognized even though I was wearing a disguise. Furries are very touchy people, I've learned. Not touchy as in overly sensitive. Well, some probably are. But they're also literally touchy. Let me tell you where I'm at in my life right now. Last December, I was in an elevator full of furries and... if my grandpa could see me now, he would probably be frowning. Or smiling, I don't know, I don't judge. We were all crowded in, there was a moose breathing down my neck, and we stopped on a floor because more furries wanted to come in. So I backed up to make more room, but I backed up a little too close to the moose, and he grabbed my hips and I went, "Ah!" in my mind. I didn't say it out loud. In real life, I went... So that was probably the weirdest fan experience I've had, if you were still wondering. I don't know if he was a fan of my YouTube, but he was definitely a fan of my body. Or he was drunk. I don't know. Again, I don't judge. I was debating on whether or not I should include this story, but I think it would be a good lesson for everyone to hear. Here's my James PSA. This message is for everyone, and especially furries. Don't touch people without their permission. In the moment, I stayed quiet, but that sort of behavior isn't okay and I should have spoken out. Hopefully, most of you are mindful of other people's personal space. However, comma, at least one of you went to prison, so... I don't know. Overall, it was the best ironic trip ever. At the end of the day, conventions are a lot of fun, and I really, really miss going to them. And when it's safe to do so again, I recommend you try and go to one you're interested in. And Grandpa, I'm sorry if I disappointed you.
I guess we're starting.
Hello, everyone. We're here to play a little drawing game, and I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hello.
Hello. So what we're doing is we each chose a Pokemon. We're changing the type. The Pokemon. Let's get started.
You have to change Beedrill into a fighting type.
Beedrill is a pretty dope Pokemon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You have Farfetch'd, and you have to change him into a psychic type.
Psychic.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Beedrill was on my team.
Did you enjoy him?
He has this move called Pine Needle.
I think it's Pin Missile.
He hit it more than once. He hit the Pokemon
more
than
once. Yeah, it's Pin Missile.
No, I think it's Pin Needle. Or Twine Needle, or something.
What was your original team?
I do not remember. I chose Squirtle, because I had Pokemon Blue, and I thought, since it's blue, then I should get... I was a little kid, alright? Squirtle's gonna be the best, because this is a Pokemon Blue. And I want to say a Parasect was on my team, too.
Really? He's, like, one of the weakest Pokemon, honestly.
When, When they're level 100, though, then...
Beaks from the front are weird.
If this is an actual Pokemon, it'd be terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Because he's, like, really big.
It's kind of weird that he was on my team, because as a kid, I was terrified of bees.
Really? I'm scared of bees, too, actually.
Yeah, I got stung. Maybe this could be a video, but I got stung twice from bees, and so I've always just never been able to forgive them for that. I don't know what you're drawing. I don't know how you're taking the rules. I just... drew him with boxing gloves on. I heard a story about Farfetch'd. I heard it on the internet. Apparently there's a saying in Japan where a duck holding a leek is abnormal, out of this world. And so having a duck carrying a leek is Farfetch'd. I can't really put shorts on a bee, though. That'd be weird. I tried. I'm taking creative liberty with what I'm doing right now.
People in your last video, I read some comments and they thought I was cheating. But you know what? I wasn't cheating, and I'm taking that as a compliment. Hate all you want.
I couldn't help myself. Okay, here is Beedrill as a fighting type.
And Farfetch'd as a psychic. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. You like jazz? Oh, it's such a meme.
It has a third eye. Oh, that's cute.
All right, next one.
The one you have to draw is Stantler.
Yours is Meganium, but you have to change him into a ghost type.
Ooh, you have to change him into a poison type. Like Zoink Scoobs. What am I going to do differently than just making it transparent? Have a sheet over its head? I'm trying to use all my creative juices right now. So I went to PAX, and I met up with one other YouTuber. He does Pokemon videos, so this is a relevant story. His name is Mand JTV Pokevids. He met up with me at PAX and was like, oh, hey, how's it going? And then I followed him on Twitter. I sent him a DM. I sent him a picture of my Breloom plush, and I said, it's the best Pokemon in the world. So I also sent him a picture of my dog, so I said, and my dog. And then he sent a picture of a figurine of a Sceptile, which is his favorite Pokemon. And then he sent a picture of his girlfriend, and he goes, and that's my dog. But then he said, oh, my girlfriend approved of that joke. So like this flower right here, I was thinking of like, oh, make it a ghost sheet, but that just ended up looking like the Breloom Tough.
There's not too many like defining features of poison types.
I was thinking you'd give him vampire teeth.
Oh, deer anatomy is weird.
Tell me about it. I have a Word document, and I made notes for each one. I only wrote one note for this one, and it's just bubble butt. Do you believe in ghosts?
This topic.
Yeah. I mean, I could cut it out. I don't have to be in this.
What about you?
No. Is it good? Is it bad? Yeah. Put a happy little dead tree right here, you know?
Happy little dead tree. This is my poison Stantler.
This is my ghost. What's it called? Bay leaf?
Ooh, spooky.
Okay, I like that.
I made it like poison barbs. I didn't give him ears!
Can I fix it? There, I fixed it.
Okay, I fixed it too. This is the real one.
The one you have to do is Wailord, and its new type is flying.
You have to do Cacturn, but he's fairy.
This is the same one that the Team Rocket people had, right?
They had the baby one. Did you know that Wailord can actually fly?
It can?
In the Pokedex entry, it says, like, his weight, and it's lighter than air, so he can technically fly.
Aren't a lot of the Pokedex entries messed up? The balloon Pokemon.
Where he drags children.
That murders kids.
I wonder if I should give him a little beak.
I remember when they had a new evolution announced, but they didn't know what type it was. Some people were guessing, oh, it's a new type. It's fairy type. I remember thinking, like, no, that's not right. They're not just going to make a new type. We gave drawing tips in your video. Are we going to do any drawing tips here?
Should we?
No. Okay, well, you're going to have a lot of free time.
Are you not done?
am I not done? So we replaced those circles with hearts. If I was coloring this, I'd color it pink.
But like a dark pink?
No.
Because he's still a bit evil. Oh, are you taking out all the evil?
How evil is he? Are any Pokemon really evil?
The balloon Pokemon seems pretty evil.
They can understand people, though, because we tell them what to do, and they listen to, well, we don't tell them what to, because they're not real.
In the Pokedex entry for Latios, it says it's one of the few Pokemon that can understand human speech. And everyone's like, excuse me.
Valentine's Day is coming up.
Happy Valentine's Day, here's a Cacturn.
You're the one I prick.
Sounds like an insult.
It's kind of giving you the ooh eyes. I like how it turned out. I'll write my name next to it. I mean, actually, I can change the color, because this is a computer. Look at that. I like it.
Are you sending it?
Yeah, I mean, I was just staring at it. So this is, what the crap, I keep forgetting the names. What was the cactus' name again?
Cacturn.
This is Cacturn as a fairy.
Wailord as a flying type.
Aw.
Aw, he's got bows.
Mm-hmm. Aw, you drew little baby Wailords.
Yeah, yours is adorable. He's like,
All right, that was fun. This is fun. I'm having fun. So it's your turn to do a fairy, and it is Gabite. Gabite.
Ooh. You have to do Shaman Land as a fire type.
Okay. I think it's pretty obvious what I'm going to do.
Set him on fire.
What's a fire version of a flower? I don't even know what this part is, but it's in it. It's in my drawing now. Never mind. I just erased it. Yeah. This looks pretty dumb. I'm not proud of what I just did, but I think I'm done. It's... whatever.
Really? Oh no. I'm almost done. I'm getting there. Fairy types, am I right?
I kind of made it go Super Saiyan.
Airplane.
Are you like by an airport?
They're like, hey, Jaden's house is over here. How about we fly an airplane around it?
Just drawn one of the best Pokemons in the world. So here he is as a fire type, and the Breloom is watching.
Here's my Gabite, who's a fairy now. Ah! Oh, you added a Mario thing.
Yeah, a fire flower. Aw, he's
thing.
Pretty cute. Aw.
Thanks.
Aw. The one I chose is Swoobat, and you're going to have to turn him into an electric Swoobat.
So you have a Emolga, and you have to change him into a dragon.
Ah! A lot of the quote-unquote dragon-type Pokemon aren't dragons. That one fluffy cloud bird is a dragon, too?
Yeah, how do his ears even work? They're, like, together, but not together.
What if we were bad at drawing? Do you think people would still watch us if we were bad at drawing? I mean, obviously, yeah.
I have no idea for this one.
Same.
Oh, he's so ugly. Let me just fix you up, pal. His eyes, that's the problem. His eyes and... no, it's his whole face.
Should we talk about the YouTube glitch? Or do you think that's going to be old news by the time this comes out?
And I feel like there's enough people already making a ruckus, and YouTube's probably freaking out.
I've created a masterpiece.
Ooh. Ooh.
What tool do you use to sketch?
The pen.
I use the marker. Yeah. Oh, this is so smarter. Amazing. Yeah, because this is a dragon.
I'm really close.
Okay, yeah, take your time, I guess. Actually, no, hurry up.
I'm going so fast right now. If you were on my screen, you'd be like, whoa, Jin, slow down.
Dang, I should color all of my things now.
More airplanes.
This is one of the proudest things I have ever made.
Oh, I like this one a lot.
I like the little magnet electric thing. I was kind of expecting you to do the fluff more jaggedy, like a Jolteon,
yeah.
You know? If I was making some edits to your drawing. Not saying your drawing's not good.
Excuse me.
I was imagining like a pow. Your next one, Go-Goat. And his new type is dragon, the one you just made me do.
You have Talonflame, and you have to change him into a psychic type.
Can I steal your third eye idea?
Do you want to?
Give him a bunch of eyes. Are there any psychic bird Pokemons?
Nope. No, there are. It's Zatu.
That counts. Drawing tips. If you just start, you're gonna be bad. Speaking of psychic, would you ever want to get your fortune told or anything?
I don't know if I believe in those.
I mean, no, but I think it's for funsies.
If it was relatively cheap.
Whenever I find a new genre on YouTube, I always feel like an explorer. So there's this whole culture on YouTube of people doing seances and spell casting and people summoning spirits on YouTube.
This has turned out weird. I'm gonna keep his hooves. It's not every day that you see a dragon with hooves.
It's not every day you see a dragon with hooves, because you know, dragons without hooves, I see those on a daily basis. I just had to draw an eye on its forehead. You just couldn't take it seriously, could you, James? Alright, yeah. Wait, that's not good. Beautiful. Terrific.
Oh, this is sketchy.
I want to bring this up before the video ends. I had this comic idea that's a little inappropriate. And I asked people on Twitter, like, oh, is this an appropriate comic idea? Everyone was saying, like, yeah, it's fine. Do it. But I'm just thinking about all of these kids I met at PAX. I'm imagining them all in a room, and they're with their parents. And then I show them the idea, and they don't laugh. And then I say, get it? That's, like, the one thing giving me doubts. All the kids that I met at PAX, they ruin everything. I could color with the marker. That's such a good idea. I've never really colored with a marker before, but this is good.
See, you discover more every day, kids.
Yeah, I can be done. No, I just want to finish coloring this. I'm going to call it good. Wait, hold on. Let me just finish coloring it. This is the bird as a psychic type.
And this is the goat as a dragon.
Ooh, that's cool.
Aw, this is cute. What is he holding? Starbucks cups?
Remember when I said I'm not taking it seriously? Those are supposed to be ice cream cartons. I like your dragon go-goat. I like the little claws and the maleficent horns, and there they all are.
I haven't seen anyone do this
Yeah,
before.
Changing the types. Yeah. It probably exists. They're going to show us and be like, look, you copied. Thanks for watching. Everyone go check out Jaden's video now.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hi.
Today, we're going to be drawing Pokemon from memory.
And yay!
We're going to do one from each generation, and there's a time limit of 4 hours per picture, so.
All right, so strap in. This is going to be a long video, everyone.
All right, so your Gen 1 Pokemon that I chose for you, Omanyte, Lord Helix.
And yours is Meowth.
Meowth?
Yeah, we're starting off easy.
Yeah, this is level one. No reference picture, just art.
My biggest, like, fear right now is being like, oh yeah, I'm a Pokemon fan, and then like drawing everything wrong. Oh no, I feel like I should have studied for a test. I feel like I'm in school again.
Why is this so hard? He was like in every episode. Does he have a nose? I can't remember if he has a nose or not.
Lord Helix, I'm sorry.
Oh crap, oh, that's on the same layer. Oh no. Maybe since he's like a villain, he should be like, you know?
He's like a bad villain. Like, not bad as an evil, but bad
like
as
a bad villain.
Actually bad.
When I'm going to be editing this, I'm just going to have like a picture of it, like just off to the side.
I really feel like I'm missing something, but I don't know what else to add.
I mean, it's just like a shell and then like something popping out of the shell, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm done.
Should we be giving any like drawing tips?
I always say practice.
That's true.
And people are like, ah, Jaden, no, there's say something else. I'm like, I don't know what else to say. So you guys just have to practice.
Can't remember if Meowth has a nose. I'm looking at it with and without the nose. So whatever. Okay, it's done. It's fine.
Lord Helix himself.
Aww. You actually did color it.
Aww.
You're pretty spot on. Yeah. Does he have a nose?
No.
It doesn't? I'm missing, like, a couple of, like, these. Whoops. And his eyeballs are like this, you know? Yeah. Okay.
All right, next one.
Next one. Your Gen 2 Pokemon is Houndoom. The grown-up of the Honduras? Is that the baby one?
Houndour and Houndoom.
Whatever, Pokemon Master.
And yours is Flaffy.
Flaffy?
Yeah, do you know which one that is?
Explain it.
Mareep, the sheep one.
Uh-huh.
The very first sheep?
Yeah, the pink
it's
one?
It's the second one.
Wait. So it's like a sheep. An electric sheep. And that's pink.
Yes.
I got it. A little sheep afro. Oh, I'm doing it on the same layer again. Let me just extend the canvas. Here, you know what? I need to restart, like, a lot of it.
I thought you were going to say, I need to research. I'm like, no. Hey!
That's the whole point of these. Is it weird that I actually sketch with a stabilizer? I think it has ears. Yeah, it totally has ears.
I know he has a skull on his chest. This looks like a seashell.
Something's off. I can't think of what, though. I know it has little, like, sheep fur somewhere else. I don't know.
I was just drawing Manectric yesterday, and this is like the opposite. It's like the fire doggo versus electric doggo.
Wait. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the thing I was drawing. I was like, wait, my thing's a doggo? I thought it was a sheep. Okay, I'm kind of done.
Are you done already?
I mean, like, are we ever really done?
When did we start? We should, like, check the time every time we begin. Mine's not colored, and I think I'm missing some details, but I think it's as good as it's gonna get now.
Okay, well now I'm not done coloring it.
There's totally something missing. Did I even get the color schemes right? Oh man. So this is what I drew.
Aww. It looks like cotton candy.
Yeah. That's aww, adorable. Yours is, that's like really good. It's like wearing kind of like a turtleneck skeleton.
You put the fluff on the wrong side of the
oh,
belly.
You're right.
All
right.
All right. Next one.
Next one.
Yours is Absol.
Absol? That's the white little wolf thing, right? Yours is Flygon.
Flygon?
Yeah. Is that too easy or is that too hard? That's too hard.
Which Pokemon did you, like, stop playing the games at?
The third one, Ruby and Emerald. I was caught up with all the hot new trends up until the fifth one. When I was choosing your, like, sixth generation one, there were some that I was not recognizing.
Uh-oh, what if I chose that one? Then you're in trouble. People are gonna be like, oh, how do you not know who this looks like? It's easier when you watch someone do it, okay, guys?
Aw, man.
I got the ones that were aesthetically pleasing to me.
You mean the ones that were cute? Is that just how you say it?
I was never, like, into the cute Pokemon. I was like, the really cool ones that were, like, powerful and stuff.
I have not gotten that far into the drawing, so if, like, if we, like, cut to you and you're, like, almost done, that'd be embarrassing.
Do insects here? They have to.
Do they?
Is that a stupid question?
Got a nice little profile shot of whatever the heck this is. Oh, I'm so glad we're not recording this and putting it on the internet. I think this is my worst one. Have you seen the new Ghostbusters movie?
No, I heard it sucks.
Oh, I haven't seen it either, so. If I had time to do line art, oh, this would look so much better. I started doing the line art, but I shouldn't have. Okay, I'm gonna give you a secret. I haven't even seen the original Ghostbusters movie.
What?
Right? Yeah, I know. I wonder if I see this new one, since I don't have anything else to, like, judge it off of. I wonder if I'll think it's better. I shouldn't color. I shouldn't.
I heard all your undos.
Just pretend I colored in the rest of the claws. Here's what I drew. It's, oh man. Don't even give a pity. Aww. Oh wow, yours is good.
Aww.
Yours is, like, really spot on. Yeah, no, I was way off with my Absol.
If Absol had a pre-evolution, that would be it.
And it doesn't even have ears. I'm excited for this one, just because I want to see what you do. All right, yours is Licky Licky.
Oh, no. Yours is Floatzel.
Is that the one Ash had in the cartoon? And it's like a water one?
Yeah, he had a Buizel, which is the first one. And then it's the next one.
I don't know what that looks like.
Floatzel. Like float, and then Zell, as in pretzel. Imagine an otter, but bigger, and he's got, like, floaties on him.
This is so far not turning out that good.
Do you think they make Pokemon ugly on purpose?
No.
Do you know Probopass?
No. Is that, like, one of the new ones?
It's like a rock one with a really big nose and a mustache.
Oh, yeah.
It's really ugly, and a lot of people don't like it.
I know a lot of people don't like the, like Garbodor? No, that's the sexy one that everyone likes. The garbage
one. No, I think it was Garbodor.
Oh. What's the sexy one likes?
What were you talking about?
I'm talking about the trash one.
I've played all of them except for Black and White 2. That was when I had my falling out. I was like, yeah. But then I came back to it.
Shoot, this is looking like a kangaroo. I kept thinking, like, there's something up here on the forehead. But I didn't know what. And you're like, you know what? I think it would look better with this. Do you think food tastes better when you didn't make it?
Yes. Isn't it like you aren't used to the smell while you're cooking? I saw another thing where, like, people would have two glasses of milk and one was dyed orange.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, this milk tastes better, but it was the same one.
There's gotta be some way we can turn this into a competition.
Didn't, like, a whole bunch of different stuff happen with Minecraft? Now there's, like, a story now.
Oh, yeah, there's like, an end. You do it, and then, like, you can still play. I know it has the floaties. Now I'm just, like, seriously just, like, adding designs.
I'm pretty much done.
The tail always has some design on it. This is what I drew.
And this is what I drew. Aww! You keep drawing them all really cute.
Are you sure? I mean, whatever, okay. I didn't think you'd get this, but Licky Licky has a Wi-Fi symbol on him. Man, there was a lot I was missing. I knew there was something on his forehead. He doesn't have ears. Yours is Rufflet.
Oh, no.
It's a bird one. It's like a bald eagle. It's like a baby bald eagle.
Oh, okay. That helped me a lot. I was about to draw the wrong gen bird. So you have to draw Crocodile.
Wait, is that the first one or the second one?
It's the third.
What?
Do you still know which one I'm talking about?
It's a crocodile.
Yeah.
And it has...
And it's red.
And it's red. And he's... And the third one, he's standing up with his arms crossed. Or am I thinking... Is the second one the one with cross arms?
Little fun fact. My first games were Ruby and Sapphire.
Uh-huh.
And my first Pokemon ever was Torchic, and that's why Torchic and Blaziken are my favorite.
Uh-huh.
In the sprite, Torchic has 1 foot up, kind of standing up. I always thought he only had 1 foot, and then he evolved, and he's like, oh, I have a foot now. I have both of them.
I always, you know, Rattatat? I always put in, like, one too many Atatas. Rattatatatat. Okay, I'm starting over. I know its eyes are, like, bulging. That's all I can think of.
Kind of. There's, like, a part that bulges out, but it's not his eyes.
What? I can't. Jaden, I can't. I'm just gonna draw a crocodile.
I can see the image.
Right?
In my head.
Same.
But I just can't.
But I tried to draw that twice, and I've given up.
How close are you to being done?
I mean, I can call it quits. It's so not a Pokemon. You're gonna look at it and be like, that's just a crocodile.
This is a weak round. It is a crocodile.
Yours is Inkay.
Inkay?
Am I saying that right?
Yours is Noivern.
What is that one? Oh, is it the bat one? That new bat one?
Yeah, and he's got, like, the ears.
Oh, he does have ears. The one that I saw that I, like, I've never seen that before. It was hands coming out of a rock. Like, if you held that one up and, like, a Digimon and you said, which one's the Pokemon? I'd be like, neither of them are Pokemon. This is not right, but I don't care. I'm making it cute.
I wonder how many people are gonna dislike this just because we frustrated them.
Like, I'm not taking it seriously anymore. This is why you need drawing references.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with drawing references. I saw a comment one time and it was like, Jaden, you use references to draw your Pokemon. I'm like,
yeah.
What else? Why are you mad at me? Oh, this is going pretty well. And then I just, like, stopped and looked at it and I'm like, oh, this doesn't look right.
I'm not making it look... Cool, I'm making it look derpy. Alright, and then it totally has little bat wings. Throw designs on the wall, see what sticks.
This poor thing.
Perfect. I'm done. Alright, this is what I drew.
This is what I drew.
Aww.
Aww! Every time I see him, it's just adorable.
Thanks. Okay, the nose is not right. And man, his wings are a lot crazier than I thought.
You got the, like, the V on his face.
So these were my Pokemon. This one's not really a Pokemon. That one didn't count. What have we learned, Jaden?
Reference photos are important.
Thanks for watching. Yeah, if you haven't seen Jaden's video, you should.
Please.
I don't know if you could tell, but we kind of did a collab.
Bye.
Bye. Wear your seatbelt.
This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip! That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate ore. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... You're filming something, and then stop the camera, and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything.
But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now, animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day, and while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Oh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and is absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy. They'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply. Basically, we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything. Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Laika's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy.
They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize. And that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brains start setting off alarm bells and go, "Ugh! Something is definitely wrong with that almost human! I am entering fight or flight right now!" So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped. And the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime. Anime? They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings.
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected.
But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kind of like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime. Nani? By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... Ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced... achievements, like putting a guy on the moon, and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know! We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this! A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look... you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame.
I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these Cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called Caps. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist. Which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations, but no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons, but they soon discovered a unique problem. The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever workaround this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's... build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions. But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin, they only drew one body and five different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into two or three different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like four, or five, or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing. I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny. Because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me. Even I'm a rig. And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too. Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like.
And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. An actor inside one of these dorky ping-pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like... shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms. Duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive, I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all of my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the three key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible. Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back.
Colleges love extracurricular activities. It is the final say whether you'll get into the college or not. You got a perfect score on the SAT? Yeah, but Billy played tennis. So I went to a preparatory school my freshman year, and I joined the newspaper club. And the only reason I did was because I wanted to put my comics in the school newspaper. I was a comic freak back then, still am though, but I went to like two meetings and it became very obvious that we weren't going to make a school newspaper. So I stopped going and I was basically a derp for the rest of the year. Sophomore year rolls around and I was going public. And one of my friends, he suggested that I do track and field. And I was like, oh, that doesn't seem like a very physically demanding sport, yeah. On the first day, I was so bad, I threw up on the warm-up lap. I mean, at least I was pushing myself. On the second day, we ran off school grounds before school started. And everyone else made it back before the starting bell rang. But me, being the slowest one on the team, didn't make it back until first period had already started. And then I had to explain to my teacher why I was late and sweaty. I quit track team after those two times, and I was basically a derp again for the rest of the year. Then junior year rolls around, and this one girl, she told me, James, you're so funny, you should try out for the improv team. And I was like, yeah, okay. Improv was basically a group of all the cool theater kids. And if you have any experience with theater kids, then you know that they're just a real treat. I walk into the room for tryouts, everyone is loud, people already know each other, and no one is quiet. Except for me sitting in a chair by myself. Everyone took a turn playing an improv game. And when it was my turn, I went up, and I tried my best, and then I sat back down. And I guess the captain saw something in me because I made the team. And it was awesome. But I only went 2 times. I'm just kidding. I stayed in there for the rest of my junior and senior year. Oh, and the newspaper team at the public school asked if I could make comics for their newspaper. One quick story about improv. So we were considered a competitive improv group that competed against other schools doing shows. And we were playing this one game called Categories. Basically, you were given a category like fruit. We would stand in a line, and if the judge pointed to us, we would have to say something in that category. And if you couldn't think of anything, or you said something that wasn't in the category, you were out. So we played the game, and it comes down to me and one other player. And our category was occupations. And out of the millions of occupations to choose from, the first thing I said was porn star. And everyone started laughing and giggling, but I was too caught up in the moment. Yeah, let's go. Has anyone said crack dealer yet? The judge said I was inappropriate, and the other team won. So that's my story. Did it help me get into a good college? No. But if there's anything you should learn from this, is that you should not be doing any sports. Okay, stomach, shut up.
So like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do.
So immediately after posting the Garfield video, which, if for whatever reason you haven't seen, you should go watch it, I had a bunch of people try and figure out what the second Garfield comic was. And you guys got it almost immediately, like within minutes. I saw a bunch of other comments out there that had the right explanation, but it was the user Solo McCraft's comment that I saw first, and it was the most upvoted. Some people probably spent a good 10 minutes typing out all these explanations. I'm sorry, but this guy was first. So after trying to figure out how to message him on YouTube, I asked if he had a Twitter. He said he did, and we talked there. You got a PayPal? No, I'm only 15. Crap. So we decided that I would pay him via a Steam gift card. I just wanted to mention that and say that I was true to my promise of $23. Except Steam only has $20 gift cards, so I guess $3 is still on the table. So now, what you've all been waiting for, let me explain what this comic was trying to do. So that is a teeth brush, and that is teeth paste, and that is John walking up to it, and okay, you know how adults and dentists tell kids that the amount of toothpaste you should put on a toothbrush should be the size of a pea? Well, that's what John was trying to say. They say you should use the amount of toothpaste that is similar to the size of a pea. See, this word pea is supposed to be the pea as in the vegetable pea. I think that's what threw me off the most, is because I kept thinking that this was a potty joke. Then John is going to brush his teeth, and he says, Garfield, that's not pea-sized. And he says this because Garfield is holding a teeth brush with a mountain of teeth paste. I thought this was like a spray or something. And then Garfield says, yes it is, because the teeth paste is pea-sized because he has a massive pea. That's why it's green. This is a pea as in the vegetable. I don't know why it's not round though. But I get the comic now! That was stupid. I just want to talk about this comment on the video I saw. That's not Garfield. That's your own original character. Garfield! And I really like that. And he's drawn like this. Ah, I love it. See, that's Garfield, and this is Garfield. And okay, there were a couple of people who redrew the comic and sent it to me. And it's funny because some of them, I don't think they knew what was happening either. So I'm just going to read some of the comics that people sent to me. So these three comics right here, they were actually correct. They got it right. I like how this one says, not as excited. There's a toothbrush, and then John's walking up to the toothbrush. And they basically all say the same thing. They say you should use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, and then he's gonna go brush his teeth, and I like how this one has a massive toothbrush, and then they all go, Garfield, that's not pea-sized, and then you see Garfield with the mountain of toothpaste, and he's like, yes it is, because he has another pea. I like this one because it's like actually round, and all the rest didn't get it right. And this one, I really like the facial expressions. There's like, he's walking up and he says, they say you should use the really big toothpaste. He's about to go and says, Garfield, that's not paste. And then he's, yes it is. Oh, I love it. This one, it feels like a computer should be reading this one.
Here is the bathroom, where the comic will take place. John walks in looking awake as ever. They said to always brush your teeth with toothpaste. He talks about what his dentist said. He gets his, IDK. Garfield, that's not a piece. Garfield interrupts him by doing, Listen, he basically pulls up the water pipe and water goes everywhere. John is upset. Then Garfield pulls up the sewage drain as well, so there is gross liquid everywhere. John is scared now. Garfield explains it all in one sentence. Yes, it is.
Good job, man. This one, I love the creative take on it. First, it's called garnish. And then John comes in. They say you should use the big toothbrush to remove all your last night mistakes. And then he has another giant toothbrush. Garfunkel, that's not a toothbrush. I know, John, it's a crack pipe. Well, life has no real meaning anyway. Ah, that was great. I like how he took what this was supposed to be a toothbrush and made it look like a crack pipe. And to be honest, it looks more like a crack pipe than a toothbrush. So good job. And this one was made like 20 minutes after I posted the video. It was drawn super fast. And I like how they drew Garfield, how I drew Garfield. So he goes, Garfield, that's not pieces. Translation, that's not your toothbrush. He takes it. And then translation, to fight John for toothbrush ownership, Garfield unleashes his secret power. Yes, it is. The secret power is being able to control a green slime. So this next one was drawn by a comic friend of mine. He makes a comic called Doggy Bag. He's on Tumblr and iFunny. I actually collabed and made a comic with him before. So this one is actually a remake of the Fire comic. And I just love all the attention to detail in this one. It starts by saying, by James R., age 6, illustrated by Doggy Bag. And has her Twitter. And he calls it Garfield. And so we see John saying happy birthday, and then wah, and then firefighters go, where's the fire? And then John goes, my cat just having a B-day. I like how the cake is falling apart. The beep beep, and the first beep looks funny like how it was in the first one. And John goes, oh no. Ah! For some reason, I just love how lifeless Garfield looks in this comic. So anyway, those were all the comics. Sorry if I missed any. Thanks for watching. We're not going to do an end card, and I'll see you next time. Mwah. No, I'm not going to do the mwah this time.
If you haven't read Lord of the Flies, you're probably going to have to in school one day. Let me give you an abridged version for when that time eventually comes. The Lord of the Flies is a book about a bunch of little British boys who got marooned on a deserted island, and the book tells the story about what the boys do to survive the elements, but also themselves. Within like a week on the island, the boys devolve into complete savages, covering themselves in face paint and killing a piggy. I said too much. And when I read the book in high school, I thought having the boys turn savage so quickly wasn't all that accurate. As a former young boy myself, I was insulted that William Golding thought that us little boys were so heartless. But then I remembered all the things that happened at my scout camp, Camp Geronimo, and I realized that Lord of the Flies is still inaccurate. The boys would have gone savage way faster. Listen, I'm a cautious person when I'm hanging around the guys. In PE, the other boys would be playing this game called Quarters, where you would fling quarters at people's knuckles until they bled, but I wouldn't play that game because it's dangerous and I'm a loser. Or when I was at a party and someone wanted to play the knife game to show off how good their hand-eye coordination was, I wouldn't play that game either because I needed my hands to draw. But something about being with the guys in the middle of the woods, I would live on the edge. Every summer, our troop stayed at this camp called Camp Geronimo, named after the Apache Indian who was the first person to yell Geronimo while doing a sick backflip into his pool. One time, me and a couple other boys, I don't remember who started it, but we were playing with matches, and okay, I know what you're thinking, but nothing bad happened, okay? We just accidentally lit some dried bushes on fire, and it got somewhat out of control, but it's okay, it's fine, okay? We told the scoutmaster that there was a loose fire spreading faster than we could put it out, and he got everyone in the troop to stomp on it, and we never got in trouble. What were we doing with the matches? Oh, we were just lighting them and throwing them at each other. Anyway, about 30 other scout troops attended Camp Geronimo, and we would spend a whole week sleeping in tents and earning merit badges. Most of the camp honestly felt like school, but outside. Like, when you got to the camp, you were given a schedule of classes, and for the next 7 days, you would go to those classes and learn and fill out packets and sometimes even have homework. Which probably helped us not devolve into savages. I mean, sure, the classes weren't as boring as English or geometry. Geronimo's classes were wilderness survival, kayaking, or bear self-defense. Earning a merit badge required two things. The first thing, you had to write stuff down. Name and point out the major parts of a kayak. Kayak. Explain to your counselor the hazards you are most likely to encounter while participating in kayaking activities. Bears. And the second part of the merit badge, you had to actually go out and do stuff. Capsize the kayak, swim it and the paddle to the shore, and if you don't make it, the bears will get you. I never got the kayaking merit badge.
You had to be at least 12 to go to Geronimo, but you could go as an 11-year-old if a parent was coming with you. And at the time, my dad was a camp counselor. My birthday was May 14th, and Geronimo was at the end of May, so I barely made the cutoff as the youngest person going. Geronimo was a big step from spending 3 days at Cub Scout Day Camp to spending a week in the wilderness. What made it worse was I was going to be spending a whole week with all the mean older scouts and my dad. There was this one scout named Paul. When I was 11, he was 15. So naturally, he would pick on me and make fun of me. Ha ha, I get it. I'm small, so I suck. But silver lining, he got fatter, and a couple years ago, he reached out to me, and I had been doing the whole YouTube thing for a while. He was off starting his own business, and he wanted to do some business opportunity with me, and I just said, hey, do you want to do my merch? So now he works for me. So kids, if you ever have bullies, just become successful on YouTube and then hire them to sell plushies. He's actually a really good merch guy. He gets all my stuff into these retail stores. So if you see a Floof plushie at Hot Topic, you can say, thanks, Paul. Bullies really do make a difference. Anyway, self-promotion aside, my first year at Geronimo, I was a little bit on the very young side compared to everyone else. I was taking a class called Orienteering. The class taught us how to read maps and use a compass. And one day, it was time for our class to go on a scavenger hunt thing. We were given a list of places we had to go to, and we were supposed to use our compass and count our paces to get to each specific location. Then when we got to our destination, there would be a marker somewhere, and we would have to write down what that marker was. There were 10 different markers that we had to find, and the course was supposed to lead us in a circle. The leader who was in charge of our group and the compass was an older scout named Paul. It wasn't the merch guy Paul, but I think it would be funnier if it was. Our group set off to the first location. Having a compass and counting your steps isn't the most accurate way of navigation, but we weren't allowed to use Google Maps, so. When we got to the spot, we had to look around for a little bit to find the marker, but we eventually found it, and then we were off to the second location. This time, the marker was harder to find. The spot we landed on was pretty far from where the marker actually was. At the third location, we couldn't find the marker. But we did see this reflective sign on a tree, and we figured that's what the marker was supposed to be, so we wrote it down. At this point, I decided to grab my own compass and give it a try. My compass pointed in a direction that was a little bit off from Paul's direction. Not by a whole lot, but just enough. But remember, I was the little kid. Nothing I said mattered. Paul said things to me like, oh, you don't know how to use a compass. I bet yours is broken. I'm never going to work for you one day. And you know what? I believed him. This guy is 15 years old. Do you know how wise and experienced he is? So we kept going and struggling. We used anything we found as a marker. Some piece of trash, it's a marker. Hey, this tree has an A and an M carved into a heart. Kind of weird that it's at an all-boys camp. Do you think that it's a marker? Eventually, we all had to admit that we were completely lost. The other boys told Paul to hand over his compass, and Paul reached into his pocket, pulled out his compass, and two buzz magnets. Buzz magnets are magnets that are shaped like a bullet, and you can throw them up in the air, and they make this cool buzzing sound. They sold them at the camp store, so that's why Paul had them. And everyone immediately figured out why we were lost. For those of you who don't know how compasses and magnets work, I don't know either. I think it has something to do with them coming from outer space. A compass is supposed to point to the magnetic North Pole, and a magnet will mess up the direction a compass is supposed to point in. Paul's compass wasn't pointing to his pants the whole time. We would have been suspicious if that had happened. But because his compass was right next to a magnet, it got uncalibrated. And then we all got lost in the woods and died. And that's why I don't have an orienteering merit badge. I was upset because my compass probably wasn't broken, but I didn't stand up for myself. Because I don't do that. I have more Camp Geronimo stories, like the time me and my friend threw a Ziploc bag full of water at the older kids' lean-to, and then I ran away so fast that I threw up. But I already did a video about that, and it's 5 years old, and it's very bad, and you're not allowed to watch it. So the moral of this video is, just because you're young doesn't mean you're stupid, but it does mean you make bad videos on YouTube. Also, check your pockets before going orienteering. Going orienteering. Sounds like a tongue twister. Going orienteering. Going orienteering. Going orienteering.
Using right that there. Jab to paw, looking for the right time for that right...
Yeah, that's me. You're probably wondering how I got in this situation. What's that? You're not wondering? This is just the natural life cycle of YouTubers, is what you're thinking? Well, why did I decide to participate in iDubbbz's Creator Clash charity boxing event where some ripped Australian guy was going to punch me in front of everyone I ever loved?
on my birthday, and I wasn't even getting paid to get punched in the head. Well, I used to always be the skinny kid growing up. Not because I was eating healthy, no, I was eating nothing. I would see all the healthy food in the fridge at home and go, aw, dang, there's nothing to eat. It wasn't until March of 2020 that I started exercising more seriously. There wasn't a lot else to do during that time, if you know what I mean. I have a really buff friend, DJ Welch, who you might know as the beefiest guy in Creator Clash. We got into a Discord call one day, and he showed me how to exercise, and we liked each other so much that we continued to work out virtually 3 times a week. And I learned a really good life hack to keep a consistent workout schedule, which is to have a gym partner. Especially one that's more experienced and knows what they're doing, and between sets you can compliment his muscles completely platonically. When you're working out by yourself, it's so easy to think, my feet hurt. I don't want to work out. I want to binge all 12 seasons of The Big Bang Theory and not laugh at all. But if you have someone waiting for you at the gym expecting you to lift weights with them, you're not going to flake as much. Plus, you get to look at muscles in the gym platonically. Sometimes you have to search for opportunities. And sometimes Ian from the channel iDubbbz drops into your DMs and asks, hey, want to get in a fight? With a bunch of other YouTubers? Completely platonically? It was probably the fact that I had been working out for quite some time, mixed with ignorance of what I was actually signing up for, that I, without any hesitation, was immediately on board with the idea and responded in all caps, YES! I've actually been working out! I was going to be fighting an Australian YouTuber named I Did A Thing, which is such a stupid username. His whole username is made up of 4 one-syllable words. That's like a whole sentence. Dude's got a whole sentence in his username. I didn't have any information on I Did A Thing. While most fighters gotta actually meet their opponents and go on their podcasts, I had to stalk my opponent's Twitter for any information I could use. Aha! A clue! He says in this tweet that he's 6'4". I'm in trouble. But at least I Did A Thing had even less information about me. Try finding a recent picture of what I look like in 2022, Alex. Google says I'm 5'9 for some reason, which now that I think about it, that would make our fight seem way more stacked in his favor. So yeah, I'm totally 5'9 and not 6 foot. Yeah, I Did A Thing was clobbering on a slightly taller Michael Reeves. I told DJ, hey, I'm gonna be in a boxing match. Good thing I'm starting to put on muscle. And DJ said, oh, no, what we've been working on won't help you in boxing whatsoever. What? So-ever? So Ian found me a boxing coach named Michael Flores, who's a 4 times Emmy-nominated belt holder and a total bro. I started training in January with the fight happening in May, and even though the final results may not have looked like it, I did train hard for this and took it very seriously. Michael wanted me to train every single day except for Sunday, and DJ could have me on Fridays. DJ, Michael's gonna be my new gym bro, bro. Bro, I'm gonna miss lifting with you, bro. The very first time I trained with Michael, he told me, boxing isn't something that you should take lightly. When you step into that ring, you're going to war. And I said, oh, yeah, dude, don't worry. I work out. I know all about war, like a lot. But it wasn't until my 3rd training session where it actually hit me. Huh. I'm going to be fighting I Did A Thing in front of all my fans and loved ones and will have an incredible amount of motivation not to lose and look bad. And I Did A Thing will be fighting me in front of all of his fans and loved ones and will also have an incredible amount of motivation not to lose and look bad. This is probably what Michael was talking about. And this is where I learned another amazing workout life hack. If you need motivation to get in shape, pay someone in Australia to come beat you up on your birthday. You'll tell yourself, am I really not going to go on a run today when there's a dude in Australia who wants to beat me up? Am I really going to eat this cupcake when a dude in Australia wants to punch me in the solar plex? In February, Ian tweeted out, looking for a heavyweight content creator, 200 plus pounds, who is down to box. Last spot available, you will be fighting a legendary Twitch streamer. And in March, DJ messaged me, hey, is Ian still looking for someone? And it turned out he was still looking for someone, so in April, DJ got added to the roster, and me and him are reunited. So DJ had about a month and a half to train, which was a little less than me, but I think he turned out fine.
Oh, and he's coming forward, and he goes down.
Since none of us were professional boxers, that meant this was a brand new and frankly bat-crap crazy experience that we were all facing together. Every single fighter trained hard for months, and we all respected the gosh darn hell out of each other. The level of camaraderie at this event was insane. And platonic. None of the fighters had any real beef with each other, except Dad, maybe? I don't know, it's hard to get a read on that guy. Whenever a fighter was done with their match and they returned to their locker room, regardless if they just won or lost the fight, everyone would applaud them and tell them good job. At least that was the blue corner, I don't know what the red corner was doing. So, let's talk about my fight. If you can call it that. There are a surprising amount of strategy and fundamentals in the sport of boxing, but the moment that that bell rings and there's a dude from Australia trying to kill you mixed with the most adrenaline you've ever felt in your life, all those fundamentals go out the window. I lasted 0.74 rounds. I wish I could tell you about all the intricate strategies that played out in my head, but the only thoughts I had during the fight were survive, survive, survive. Ow, where am I? After months of work and literal gallons of sweat later, I only lasted for a minute and a half, which actually isn't too far off from what it's like working in animation. I had a few notes on my performance, like I definitely should have moved my head better, and yeah, I got hit in the head a lot, but I did get Alex with this nice body shot and he did this weird spinning move, and then I just watched him do it for some reason. It is what it is. Half of us had to lose, and I lost. And now there exists some amazing gifts of me getting socked in the head. These are going to outlive me. At the end of it all, I'm still extremely glad to have been a part of this. Not only did the event raise
$1.3 million
for
Alzheimer's Association,
but I also went out of my comfort zone and challenged myself. Even though I got my butt handed to me, the journey was worth it. You don't grow as a person by winning all the time. You have to lose in order to get stronger. I didn't think I'd ever say this, but I still want to continue boxing training, just without the looming threat of a chiseled kangaroo beating me up on my birthday. I have a much deeper appreciation for the sport of boxing and anyone who is brave enough to step into the ring. And if this was the first boxing show you ever watched, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're thinking about putting some gloves on and giving boxing a try, then I totally recommend it. Hitting things is a whole lot of fun. I want to thank my coach, Michael Flores, who's an amazing guy and always pushed me to do my best, even after I lost. I want to thank DJ, who's been an amazing virtual workout partner, and I probably wouldn't have even had the confidence to participate if it wasn't for him. I want to thank my girlfriend, who got me my custom outfit for my birthday and supported me through all my training. I want to thank Anissa and Ian for putting on this amazing event. As first events go, it went over flawlessly. I want to thank my opponent, Alex, along with all the other fighters who train hard. It was super fun meeting all of you.
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday, dear Jay! Happy birthday to you!
Now, you might think that since I'm making a part two of this, I must get recognized a whole lot. Like I'm some sort of celebrity or something. No, 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 no. What actually happens is that I'm awkward, and I don't want to speak for everyone, but chances are you're awkward too. So when I do get recognized, we're both being awkward, together. And that stuff makes for great videos. Once you get to my level of YouTube fame, whenever I go out in public, I always have a thought in the back of my mind, I wonder if any of these people have seen me pour sprinkles over my shirtless body. I especially get worried when I see my target demographic in public. Little boys. This might be paranoia or anxiety, but I swear sometimes little boys will stare at me for an uncomfortable amount of time, and I'm just trying my best not to make eye contact. You know, I don't really have any defining physical characteristics that make me stand out. As of right now, little boys have to look at me and think, is that tall, white, dirty, blonde-haired, early 20-year-old beta male that one YouTuber I like, or am I just imagining things? It's funny I call myself the odd ones out when I'm part of, like, no minorities. I mean, I might get nervous around little boys, but when I do get recognized, it's the highlight of my day. So I don't know what I'm worried about. I should just wear a shirt that says, hey! I'm the odd ones out. So one time I went to Walmart and I was buying a bunch of whoopee cushions for my April Fool's video. And as I was walking down the aisle, I saw this little boy at the other end walking towards me and his face just lit up. And I thought, oh, this kid knows! This is happening, ladies and gentlemen! Here we go! Are you James? Who? And then I walked off.
I'm just kidding. I mean, I did say who, but I didn't walk away. I was just messing with the kid. It was probably really weird for that kid to see a YouTuber in Walmart buying nothing but whoopee cushions. So that was fun. This other time, I was buying supplies for my 3 million sprinkle video, and I ended up going to 3 different stores. Hey, do you guys have an inflatable pool? Yeah, what size do you need? Enough to fit 3 million sprinkles. What are you using it for? I need it for a thing. So after I finished my important business errands, I felt a little hungry, so I decided to buy some pre-made food. I work hard, dang it, I deserve it. And I decided to go eat at Zupa's. Zupa's is a pretty good restaurant. They have sandwiches and soup, and they give you a chocolate-covered strawberry with every order. I'm telling you this because I want them to sponsor me. I went up to the counter, and there was this employee that said, "Hey man, what's up?" And this is gonna be a bit of a tangent, but I just wanna say that I absolutely love that kind of employee. It's so much better than those fake fast food employees. Do you know the ones I'm talking about? Like, every time I pull up into a Chick-fil-A drive-thru, there'll be an employee that will say, "It's always a great day at Chick-fil-A. My name's Mackenzie. How may I serve you?" And I just want to say, Mackenzie, 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 I came here yesterday and Brian said the exact same thing. I know your manager told you to say that. Look, neither of us want to be here, okay? No one says it's a great day at Chick-fil-A, okay? That's so dumb. So stop lying to me and give me the usual. Like, I would much rather have a fast food employee just say, "What do you want?" Okay, maybe not that rude, but you get the point. So now there's a random guy who works at Zupa's who doesn't even know I put him in a YouTube video, but I like his work ethic. Treat me like a person and not like a customer. Anyway, tangent over. I ordered some soup and a sandwich. Cool. I go up to the cash register. My soup is ready, but my sandwich wasn't. The girl said, "Did you get anything else or just soup?" I said, "No, I got a sandwich too." I paid for the food, but the sandwich still wasn't ready. I checked my phone, looked at Twitter. By now, the sandwich was done. The girl took the sandwich and the soup and a chocolate-covered strawberry and put it in a plastic box doggy bag thing. I was super hungry. I thought the transaction was done, so I grabbed the box and started sliding it towards me. Then she took out a plastic bag and said, "Oh, do you want it in a bag?" And I thought, "Yeah, I do." So I slid the food back over, and as this girl was putting the food in the bag, she yelled, "James!" And I was not ready for that. "Oh, hey, I mean, who?" She said, "Did you come here because of my email?" "You sent an email?" So that was pretty fun. All the other employees were like, "Wait, this guy's important? There's a high chance that this woman is watching this video right now, and I looked up her email, and her name is Scarlett. Isn't that a nice name? So Scarlett, if you're watching, can you tell your coworker I like his work ethic? Also, can you hook me up with free Zupas?" I never really understood how people could get nervous talking to me. I'm just some 21-year-old who likes M&Ms and drawing cartoons for the internet. I've always thought of myself as a pretty normal guy. At least, I never understood that sort of nervousness until I met Carl Sagan 42. I recently got into this game called Mario Maker, which is a game where you can make your own Mario levels and share them with the world via the internet. I wanted to find some Mario Maker Let's Players that were, one, good at the game, and two, weren't screaming every 10 seconds, which is actually a lot harder to find than you might think. But I went searching and I found these three Let's Players who mostly play Mario Maker, and they're alright at the game. I mean, they're only a little better than me. If one of my videos gets delayed, you could probably thank these three because I'm watching their videos instead of working. Also, this is gonna sound weird, but every morning after I wake up at 12, I pour myself a bowl of cereal and I watch one of their videos. So I start my day off with my Mario Maker boys. Anyway, one of the Let's Players, Carl Sagan 42,
Mushroom,
was going to Phoenix Comic Con, which was great because I was also going to Phoenix Comic Con. I didn't have a panel or anything, I just went with Jaden and her friends and we just walked around. Comic-Con was a lot of fun. I met up with a lot of people. I even got recognized at Subway. One of the workers knew me. There is this room where you could play video games, and I went up to this one kid playing Super Smash Brothers, and I said, "All right, dude, let's do this." And he said, "I feel like I know you from somewhere." Huh, okay. And then I totally wiped the floor with him with Kirby, and he was like 12 years old. So I had a fun time at the con, but I also wanted to meet Carl. Now, Carl wasn't going to the con because of his Mario Maker skills, but rather he was going because he's actually a scientist who studies vaccines and plants, and he was going to talk about that. So on Friday, after doing some stalking on Twitter, I found out that he had a panel at 9 p.m. Yes! Leading up to the panel, I realized that I was getting my information off a tweet and not from the official Comic-Con handbook, so I didn't even know if I was going to the correct panel. When 9 p.m. rolled around, I walked into the room Carl said he was having his panel. I saw a group of 5 people sitting on a stage, but I didn't see Carl. Guess he's not here. Oh wait, he is here! He's just the only person in cosplay! That's the guy I like! The one in the wig! As I listened to his panel, I kept telling myself that Carl was just a normal person like me. He plays Mario, I make cartoons, I shouldn't be nervous to talk to him. Why am I like this? The panel was great, everyone enjoyed it except for this one woman who I think was anti-vaccine. Once it was done, the panelists stayed around for a couple of minutes and I went up to Carl and I said,
Hey, I really like your Mario Maker streams. And since he talked about vaccines, I showed him this comic I made back in 2014, which I will read now. Hey folks, are you tired of hearing this? Can you believe all the horrible things doctors put in vaccines? There's no way I'm vaccinating my child. We'll suffer no longer with the anti-anti-vaccine. The anti-anti-vaccine will stop anyone from thinking vaccines are harmful or cause autism. And then he injects the anti-anti-vaccine into the person, and then he flops over. Is he okay? No, he's dead. Vaccinate your relatives today. It's dark, yes, but Carl liked it, and he even said that AAV is a name of a virus, so vaccine is actually a virus. Well, actually, vaccines are viruses, so. The anti-vaccine lady was behind me, and I think she wanted to talk to Carl, so I said, okay, I love you, bye, and I left Carl to deal with her. Some of you might be wondering why I didn't say, oh, also Carl, by the way, I have 3 million subscribers on YouTube. Well, because I think that's rude. And I didn't want to flex too hard. I mean, if he did ask about my sub count, I totally would have told him, but I don't know, I just didn't want to brag. I tell you this story because I understand that people might get anxiety talking to someone they look up to. And just because I have more subs than someone doesn't mean I won't get nervous talking to them. Senpais can have senpais too. I wonder who Carl's senpai is. Then 2 days later, I tweeted out to him and he followed me back and we're BFFs now. Now guys, don't embarrass me in front of Carl, okay? Don't just go to his channel and comment, who's here because of the odd ones out? Because no one cares, alright? If you have to comment, comment, wow, great video, Carl. You're an awesome person when it comes to Mario. You just jumped right into my heart. And also, you can check out the other two that I mentioned. They're pretty good, too. So, in conclusion, is it cool to be recognized? Yeah. Will I ever get tired of it? Who knows? I don't go outside that much. Ergo, I don't see people that much. Ergo, I don't get recognized in public that much. Now you might think, James, really? You get recognized? But you're just some college dropout sitting in the closet right now making cartoons on the internet. People recognize you and talk to you and ask for your autograph? Yeah, I thought the same thing. I don't even show my face that much in my videos, so I don't know how people remembered what I looked like. When I first started drawing comics 4 years ago, I was never expecting that later people would be coming up to me and nervously asking me to write my name down on a piece of paper. Now, can I just talk about this? I don't have a signature, and if I'm going to be signing things, I really should start thinking about getting one. I signed 6,000 cards, and on all of them, I just wrote James and put a little smiley face. I probably wrote my name out more times that week than I did my entire life. Also, another thing, I have terrible handwriting. You'd think since I'm good at drawing cartoon characters, I should be good at drawing letters of the alphabet. Whenever I sign something, I always have to warn my fans, I'm really sorry, I have bad handwriting. And they always say the same thing, it's fine. No, it's not fine. I'm about to ruin whatever this pen touches. I don't get recognized nearly as many times as you might think. Like, I can go to the grocery store and not get recognized at all. Although, I am noticing that I get weird looks from kids now. I don't know if that's because of YouTube, though. But if you do see me out in the wild, then by all means, come up to me and say hi. Even if you're not sure it's me, still come up and ask. Even if I'm on my phone, just slap it out of my hand and I'll say, dude, what the heck? And then you say, the odd one's out, and I'll say, maybe. I'm a pretty chill guy, okay? The only time I can think of it not being okay to come up and talk to me is if I'm asleep. Don't wake me up, guys. One time I was at the dollar store, not a proud moment in my life, and later I went home and someone on Twitter asked, hey, were you just at the dollar store at this address? And I said, maybe. Another time I was at Chipotle, and I know in a previous video I said, hashtag boycott Chipotle because they didn't hire James like 3 years ago. But I'm a weak man. I might have to call off the boycott. So anyway, I'm standing in line to get a burrito, and I see a girl sitting down in the chairs looking at her phone, and she sort of looked like a girl that I went to high school with. Is that Rachel? I didn't say anything though. I got my food and as I was about to leave, I glanced back at the girl and she was looking at me. We both had that look in our eye like, yeah, we know each other. So I went over to her and I said, hi Rachel, are you James from The Odd Ones Out? You didn't go to high school with her. Okay, well I'm gonna go now. Good luck on your own. Yeah, I am. What's your name? Maria? My name's James. You already knew that. If you're watching, Maria, when I saw you, I thought we went to high school together. You look like someone who was on my improv team. So I recently went to PAX South with my friend Eugene. That's not his real name. I asked him if he was okay with me saying his real name in this video. He said he was fine with it, but I think calling him Eugene would be funnier. If you don't know what PAX is, it's basically Comic-Con, but only for games. They have card games and board games, but it's mostly video games. I've known Eugene for about a year now, but I've only ever talked to him over the internet. One day he asked, hey, do you want to go to PAX South with me? It's in my hometown. And I said, sure, because I think that's what friends do. I'm going to leave out a lot of details about what I did at PAX because I think that can be a video all by itself. But just traveling there, I was recognized. I got on the airplane to go to Texas and this girl and her mom sat next to me. And I noticed that the girl's iPad wallpaper is Markiplier and Jacksepticeye. Part of me wanted to say, oh, so you watch YouTube videos? Do you know me? But that's a tacky thing to say. I thought if she knew me, she'll say something. Don't start off conversations like that. We went the whole flight without saying anything to each other, and then when we landed, Mom said to me, hey, my daughter thinks you make YouTube videos. Maybe. On Friday, Eugene had to go to classes before PAX, so I went with him just so I could go straight to the convention. One of his classes was in a computer lab. I sat down next to Eugene's friend, and the computer was already logged on, so I was worried that I might be stealing someone else's spot. Then some other guy walks into class, and he looks at me and goes, whoa. And I said, oh, is this your spot? You're the odd ones out. Maybe. I didn't know him, but he knew me. Which is weird to think about. Of all the places you'd expect to meet a YouTuber, your computer lab wouldn't be one of them. I started messing around on Microsoft Paint. I wasn't paying attention to the teacher. I drew a landscape with a horse. It was beautiful. And then I drew my cartoon character with a mouse. Also, side note, this is why you don't draw with a mouse, kids. And Eugene's friend saw it and said, hey, that looks like a YouTuber my brother watches. And I said, huh. Weird. And then I went to PAX, I got recognized a lot there. I almost got kicked out because of all the people who recognized me were causing a fire hazard. After PAX was over, I went to the airport to go home. I got recognized by another kid who didn't even go to PAX, and also apparently another person recognized me and took this stalkerish photo and tweeted it to me. You could have said, hey, I was just playing on my DS, I wasn't doing anything important. And then while I was making this video, I got recognized again at Target. Not including VidCon, PAX, and the junior high that I tutor at sometimes, those were all the times that I got recognized. That I remember. At PAX, there was this boy who came up to me and said, you at the bed until you were 8 years old. He was bringing up a joke in the peeing video where I said if we ever meet each other in real life, you're not allowed to bring it up. But the kid was saying it obviously as a joke. I knew he was messing around with me, so I laughed and I pushed him away like, eh, get out of here, you knucklehead. But then later I was thinking, I probably pushed that kid a little too hard. I hope I didn't make a bad first impression. So, if I pushed you at PAX, I was doing it in a loving manner. In conclusion, if you see me out in public, don't be afraid to come up to me and say, hey James, you left your house. Good job. I'm a pretty normal person.
I'm at the supermarket, gonna cop some rhubarb. I reach into my pocket, it's time to get charged. I'm paying cash and I know what happens next is strange. I flash a stunning smile and say,
change.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. You can have that money. It's yours. And also coins are uncomfortable in my pockets.
Sitting by my computer, mom comes inside the lair. It's smelling like a sewer.